You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
So, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we've got something I would consider special. We're smoking one of the first Fuentes we've smoked on the podcast, but we've actually got the Don Carlos, Eye of the Shark.
Yeah, it's a special edition of the Don Carlos that they released in celebration of Carlos Fuentes Sr.'s 80th birthday.
Absolutely, and he just recently passed, and that's the reason we wanted to pick up the cigars. I don't know how long, you know, this blend's going to remain around. I mean, you know, he, this was his 80th, blend for the 80th birthday, and, you know, he passed away on his 81st. So, you know, kind of to pay homage and everything else, I thought it'd be, you know, fitting for us to try the Don Carlos Eye of the Shark.
Yeah, and before we kind of get into talking about Fuente Sr., talk about the cigar. I mean, it's kind of an oddly shaped cigar. It starts off almost like a torpedo and then goes into a box press. So it starts off round and then like the rest of it's all squared up. So it's,
well,
it's,
I know,
kind of,
you know, last year when this cigar was released, a lot of people have come out and said this is probably one of the most beautifully wrapped cigars of 2015. Like, I mean, just to your point, you know, it's a box press, but it's a box press that, you know, tapers down into the torpedo and everything. You don't really see a shape like this. And I got to say, as far as, you know, the mouthfeel and the enjoyment, like sometimes with a box press, you know, when you make that initial cut, it can sometimes feel a little bit, you know, weird, you know, having that, you know, more of a square shape more so than, you know, a smoother round shape, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, like the body of a box press always feels good, like in your hand, because you have that flat grip on it between your fingers. But yeah, the mouth area can be a little difficult.
So, you know, this, I mean, it fits the hand perfectly. It feels good, you know, in the mouth. And I got to say, as far as the, the flavor profile and everything, I mean, right now, within the first third of the cigar, I would put this more of a medium. There is a touch of spice there, but not enough for me to say that, you know, it's a full bodied smoke. This is definitely, you know, more on the milder side, you know, compared to what you and I typically smoke. Folks that are familiar with the...
But it does have a little peppery taste to it.
Yeah, I mean, just a hint of it, though. It's not over the top and overbearing, so...
Yeah, it's not like an Opus X with the pepper, but it has a little bit of that spiciness to it. And that's kind of the thing you... Fuente cigars, they kind of stick to the more classic flavors and whatnot. Yeah, it's like you don't get anything super wild out of a Fuente.
But I mean,
there,
you know,
like just solid classic cigar.
And I mean, I that's what, you know, Fuente, I guess, is most renowned for is, you know, I mean, if I go pick up a Queen Bee or an Añejo, I know what I'm going to get out of every single cigar every single time. You know, there's not, you know, really any inconsistencies or anything that you sometimes find with, you know, some of the smaller companies that are still trying to fine-tune their craft.
Yeah, and there's not a whole lot of information about the blend, but it does have a Cameroon wrapper on it, which tends to be a little bit more fragile. So, yeah, it can crack on you if you're not careful. So it's not one you want to chew on. But, you know, speaking of the originator of this cigar, Carlos Fuente Sr., I mean, he is probably one of the people that even don't know about cigars know who Fuente is, or at least the name Arturo Fuente and Fuente Cigars, because, like, they have literally been around for, you know, longer than we have. I mean, they're one of the biggest cigar manufacturers, but it's still a family-owned business. It's not like General Cigar that owns like all these brands. I mean, Fuente has been Fuente since, you know, Senior's father started the company, you know, back in 1912. And when he took over the company and like I said, when the company started, they were literally making cigars on their back porch. I mean, it was literally a tiny family operation during Arturo's, or, you know, the original times of it. At one point, they grew up to where they had like 500 employees, but then their factory burnt down and they kind of went back to just a family business. And when Senior took over in like 1958, he bought the company from his father for a dollar, and they had like maybe $1,600 worth of assets in the company. And now it's become one of the largest cigar manufacturers, you know, independent cigar manufacturers of, you know, the world. You know, they're not, you know, a corporation. I mean, it's still to this day a family owned business, you know. Fuente Jr. and I can't remember her name, but
Cynthia.
They still run this company. And that, as far as like, you know, you see some companies when they get big, then they tend to turn into like, you know, a corporation. But this is something that's always been family owned and family run, you know, for the last 80 or, well, hell, last 100 years almost. So it's like, you know, it's probably one of the most recognizable cigar brands. I mean, like I said, everybody knows the Fuente name. And he's probably, if it wasn't for them, then, you know, the cigar industry might not be as big as it is today.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, I mean, you've got the, you know, one of the most coveted, you know, cigars, the Opus X that came, you know, from Fuente, but then you've got, you know, the Ashtons, the Diamond Crowns, you know, so many other, you know.
Like I said, he's made cigars for other companies, and like I said, it's, you know, some of his collaborations are great too. And even like I said, we haven't reviewed it on the show, but like one of my favorite cigars, which is, I mean, it's more limited than the Opus X, because you can pretty much find an Opus X year round, but, you know, the Añejos, they're only released at Christmas and Father's Day. And when I was reading up on Fuente, like, that kind of blend was almost like built out of necessity, because they had basically a hurricane wiped out their crop of the leaves for the wrapper of the Opus X. So he had all this Opus X blend laying around that he couldn't turn into Opus X's. So he used a U.S. Connecticut Maduro wrapper and made them into the Añejo. And then that's probably become one of their best limited edition cigars.
Yeah, I mean, I always look forward to the Añejos coming out. And in fact, you know, we even talked about picking up, you know, the Añejo for this show. But, you know, since we wanted to pay homage, you know, specifically to Don, that's the reason why we got the Eye of the Shark instead. And, you know, the Añejo, I mean, is a damn good smoke. I mean, you know, this is very much the Añejo blend with just an added spice. That's how I would, you know, describe the cigar that we're smoking now.
Yeah, and like I said, he was, when, like, back in 97, when Cigar Aficionado, which is the biggest cigar magazine, started their Cigar Hall of Fame, he was one of the inaugural inductees into that Hall of Fame that first year. And one of the quotes from an article back then, when they were interviewing him, he was like, "I've never cared about being the biggest. I've only cared about being the best." And that's probably like the words to live by there for, you know, not just people in the cigar industry, but almost like any kind of
business owner.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you have the best product, then, you know, you're going to rise among the ranks. Like,
yeah. Cause yeah, some, yeah, it's, you don't want to be like a Walmart where you're huge, but you got, you know, shitty products. It doesn't matter if you're the biggest, if you are the best. Yeah. So yeah, this, you know, as we fire one up for Fuente Senior, you know, it's, yeah, hopefully his family keeps this, you know, the tradition alive. And
I mean,
not
it's gone on this long. I don't foresee it stopping. I mean,
I mean, even with the pending FDA regulations, you know, if anybody is going to survive, it's going to be the Fuente.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I mean, Yeah, that's what sucks about the FDA is it's going to make it harder for, you know, some of the more, you know, boutique, you know, cigar, you know, companies out there. But, you know, I mean, you've got some that are so established and so timeless that, you know, it's going to be really hard to regulate because they can afford the, you know, the lawyers and all of the testing and, you know, everything that.
Yeah, part of the regulations, anything made before, 2007, doesn't have to go through regulations. And Fuente's been around long enough that they've got enough old blends that, like I said, they may not get anything new, which we, they can survive alone. Even if they never make a new cigar, they can survive alone on what they've, established so far. I mean, the Opus X is kind of like, it's not my everyday smoke, but it's one of those that, like, if you're a cigar smoker and there's a special occasion, a birth, a marriage, or whatever, that's your celebration stick is pretty much everyone's go-to is that Opus X.
I don't know. I kind of been gravitating. I mean, it is a damn good smoke, but there's a couple of others that, you know, I'm not afraid to reach out to in those occasions as well.
I mean, don't talk shit on the Opus X while we're talking about
it. I'm memorial, not talking man. Shit. Like I said, it is highly coveted, and it's a damn good cigar. I mean, when I first got into cigars, that was the first celebratory cigar that, in fact, I didn't even purchase for myself. I had some friends that purchased it for me. And, now if, I've got friends or whatever and, they're not after, some of the absolute powerhouses that I kind of go toward, then the Opus is what I'm going to get every single time.
Yeah, that usually ends up being my birthday cigar. And speaking of weird things, this week's episode is going to be about Stranger Things. There was no really good transition for to introduce this week's topic. That show is something that's kind of blown up. Like I said, I didn't really pay attention to it until I kept.
Transition should have been this. Just like Fuente is going to be a timeless classic, let's pay, fast forward to Stranger Things, which pays homage to a shitload of timeless classics.
True. Like I said, it was something that kind of blew up on my Facebook feed. Like, everyone was talking about how great this show is, and I was like, had to try it out, and then was instantly hooked. So we'll be right back. It's time to talk about something that has taken the internet by storm. Stranger Things.
And I can't even say it's the internet by storm, man. I mean, like, everybody in our office, folks that, when I was talking to them about Stranger Things, had no clue about the Goonies. Or,
how dare they?
Yeah, exactly.
You need to educate those bastards.
Well, the problem is, they're all, 20 years old and, have no clue about the greats and the classics. Like,
all right, everyone out there now of the cigar nerds community, it is your duty to find someone younger than you and introduce them to the 80s classics. If they have not seen Goonies, you slap that person and you make them go watch Goonies right the fuck now.
Yeah. I mean, the Goonies, Aliens,
And if you are listening to this podcast and haven't seen the Goonies, pause. Like, you're not allowed to listen until you go watch Goonies. Come back after you've watched Goonies.
And we'll be right back. Because that's how great of a film it is. I don't know. You know, you and I were discussing off air, you know, some of our thoughts. And, I mean, for me, the show was so awesome. I mean, not only just because of the action and the kids acting. And I got to say, man, like, there's not too many films out there that let kids be kids in their acting now. Like, at that age, I could relate so much because behind my parents' back, I would swear. I would get into mischief. I would, you know, like, and the fact, too, of I was a nerd, so downstairs playing, you know, video or, you know, fucking Dungeons and Dragons or just any board game or anything, you know, there was so much there that I could relate to, and I was like, you know, just sent me flashbacks to when I was a kid.
Yeah, this show is, it was one of those, like, there was no advertising that I saw. It was, like I said, it really came out of nowhere, and everyone started watching it. Like, so many people, like, at, and I said, working out, and sort of, if you're like, have you seen Stranger Things? We're going to have a 30-minute session about theories and whatnot. And if anyone who's not, like, super familiar with it, it was a Netflix original series that takes place in 1983 in a small town in Indiana known as, was it Hawkins? But it's actually filmed here in Georgia. Jackson, Georgia is the fictional town of Hawkins. So if you ever want to go ride back into the 80s, just go to Hawkins, Georgia. But it's, I don't know, when I tried to describe it to people, I was like, it's Goonies meets Poltergeist.
Meets Aliens.
E.T., Aliens. It's like, everything from the 80s is like balled up into this one thing. And I mean, there's shady government labs doing something. There's some kind of weird interdimensional creature running around. it's got its dark, scary moments. It's got its deep dramatic moments. And then it's also got, you know, some comedic elements too. I mean, it was just so, it, like, hooked you in. I mean, it's directed by twin brothers, which, you know, that's also weird as well. So, the Duffer brothers, who, this is only really, like, the third thing that they've done. So, it's, I mean, these guys, for something that's almost their, you know, straight out the gate, they hit a home run with this show.
Well, you know, and I was kind of reading, you know, a little bit about, you know, the Duffer brothers and when, you know, they were trying to, you know, pitch their idea to major networks and stuff, and people didn't want a part of it, saying that, no, you know, this wouldn't appeal to today's audiences and everything else. And, you know, I just love the fact that, you know, once again, you know, Netflix is willing to, hey, you know, we're more than willing to give you a shot. Like,
yeah, because Netflix, I mean, their business model, they've got enough money. They don't care to, like, experiment and try stuff.
But, I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, hell, with the success of the Goonies and everything else, I mean, it just, you know, I mean, I kind of see this as almost sticking it to the man in a sense. Like, you know, where the big Hollywood studios or the major networks are like, no, that'll never work. That'll never fly. And then you just have something that just takes off like a rocket, you know, with a show like this. And, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, I love it when the fans kind of give a middle finger to those companies.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost got even an X-Files feel to it, or at least, you know, because you got the government doing some shady shit, and that was the other thing, too. With this, like I said, it's 8 episodes, you know, Netflix original. It's, even though it's inspired by stuff of the 80s, it's an original idea, and yeah, we don't get a lot of those anymore. Like,
you get so many reboots,
remakes, whatever, that, you know, it's rare to see something that you're not, oh, this is just like this other thing. You know, I think it definitely gets big points for nostalgia factor, because, like I said, there's so much stuff in the 80s. But it's, even if you are not someone who grew up with the things that inspired the show, you can understand it and get hooked on the story without the added references.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was kind of the thing that, you know, surprised me is, you know, originally, like, I'm looking in, you know, I'm like, man, is all this, like, even intentional? Am I just, like, on some kind of nerd?
Yeah, because it's not like when you go see a show and they, like, you know, quote Star Wars, you know, where it's like, obvious, like, this is a reference to this other thing. It's almost just thematically. Like, and there's plenty of, like, YouTube videos. You go check them out where they're, like, they've got, like, screenshots, like, side by side of, like, Stranger Things and a scene from Aliens or whatever. And it's, you know, and then in some cases, it's almost, like, shot for shot, nearly. Yes. But it doesn't, like, overtly say, hey, we're talking about this thing. So even if you're not familiar with what it's, you know, doing an homage to, it, you know, still works.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing is, you know, a younger audience, you know, can watch it and just be like, oh, that was awesome. You know, guys of our age, we watch it and we see all the throwbacks and the nostalgia. And yes, the show itself is awesome. The kids acting and everything absolutely killed it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and like these kids, which were played by Finn Wolfhard, his character Mike Wheeler, Gatton Matarazzo was Dustin, Caleb McLaughlin is Lucas, and Noah Sharp, I can't pronounce your last name, plays Will Byers, who is like kind of like the center of this show, because he disappears on his way home. It's probably taken by some kind of monster. And then the rest of the series is them trying to find out what happened to Will. You know, and they come across shady government stuff, and they also, while they're out trying to find their friend, run across a girl with psychokinetic powers, played by Millie Bobby Brown, which that's a pretty badass name.
Yes.
Known as Eleven.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I was reading, you know, some of the stuff about, you know, when they were casting the kids, and basically, like, I forgot how many, you know, I want to say it was like 960 or something
hundred.
Like, you know, potential kids, and then...
And
once
they had
to
read scenes from
you know,
Stand By Me was their audition pieces.
So that was and then it's like, all right, to get ready for your role, I'm going to need you all to go and watch these classic movies. Like,
yeah.
Pay attention to how the kids are acting here and stuff. And, I mean, it just worked. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the kids go in the movie, they were brilliant. They're probably going to have, like, you know, long careers if they don't, like, blow up like, you know, some kid actors do. Because, I mean, the scenes where they're just absolutely freaking out, and, yeah, the dramatic scenes, it's spot on. Like, I mean,
yes.
You would think these kids had, like, a long acting history and not, you know, just kids.
Well, and that was the thing, too, is, you know, I feel like oftentimes, you know, with the political correctness of today's society and things. Like, when they portray kids in a lot of films, they don't act like kids. Like, they act like, you know, you're either a perfect little angel or you're the spawn of Satan. Like, you know, to have kids cussing and, you know, getting into mischief and stuff
that
like that.
That was one
like,
of the things.
You know, that's... It reminded me when I was that age. Like, yeah, I wouldn't say that in front of my parents, but behind my parents, yes.
Exactly. I mean, the kids talked like kids, or at least kids of the 80s. And that was one of the things that really, when I was thinking about this afterward, is this show had to be set in the 80s. There's no way they could have set that in 2016. Because, man, I mean, I remember when I was, you know, that age, you know, we'd go off, parents not know where we were, and, you know, ride our bikes, four-wheelers, whatever, out in the middle of nowhere and just do stuff. And no one really, like, you know, as long as we were home for dinner, no one really cared about where we were at or was checking up on it. Yeah. But today, with cell phones and all that stuff, and, you know, the 24-hour news cycles and stuff making everyone think that it's a more dangerous world. Because back then, it was probably still a dangerous world, but we just didn't know about it. So they let us all go just do dumb stuff. But, like, nowadays, I mean, if these kids did what they did in this show, like, now, like, their parents would probably go to jail for, like, neglect. There's no way these kids would be, like, off hunting monsters on their own.
That, or you would have the social justice warriors, you know, out there, like, no, you can't raise your kids free range. You need to control every aspect of their life and blah, blah, blah. Like,
yeah, I mean, this show, like, almost had to be set in that time period. Also, with, like, the shady government stuff going on. Like, nowadays, like, I mean, our government's probably still doing something shady, but we all think they're just too incompetent to do that stuff. Or there's you know, back in the 80s, the government was doing shady stuff and nobody knew about it because there wasn't like a cell phone camera in everyone's hand. There's nobody tweeting. There wasn't like, you know, Eric Snowden's or these, you know, of whatever the anonymous groups that were bringing all this stuff to life. So like, you know, back in the, during the Cold War era, the government could really do some top secret stuff that no one knows what the hell's going on.
Well, I mean, you knew about it, but it was being broadcast over AM radio, so you would have to, you know, put the tinfoil on just the right way. And
your tinfoil hat.
Yeah.
And everybody just assumed you were crazy.
And you would only get the signal, you know, for 43 seconds out of a 24-hour day.
That and, like, the Freedom Kids had back then that they don't have now, or at least you don't see that. And also, it like movies in the 80s, like kids were in legitimate danger in the plot of the movie. Like the Goonies, like, you know, they were getting chased by people with guns and setting off booby traps and stuff. It seemed like, you know, Goonies, Monster Squad, even E.T., there was kids being put into danger. Like nowadays, like that doesn't fly. It's like I guess we hit a point where we're like, no, like, you know, if you're going to put somebody in a horror movie or in a dangerous situation in a movie, it needs to be at the least a teenager, someone that, you know, at least looks like an adult. You know, we didn't have 12-year-olds like fighting monsters.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't have
nowadays
stuff like
as we did back
The Exorcist
back then.
And Poltergeist and, you know, some of the other, you know, films that, you know, this show kind of paid a little bit of homage to at times.
Yeah, with especially like the first thing that came to my mind was Poltergeist, because, you know, Will gets sucked into, it turns out this monster that everybody's dealing with is actually an interdimensional being from some place they refer to as the Upside Down, which is some kind of basically a dark mirror universe of our reality where everything is just kind of rotting and black, which, you know, they never really explain why it's like that, but there's this lone creature, you know, kind of like that has like the internet's been calling him the tulip face monster because his face is,
I mean,
it doesn't look like
it looks
has
like
no
tulip
face, and it just opens up like a flower and it's just a giant mouth. But this thing can kind of like pass between the realms and it snatches up Will Byers, and it's very much like Caroline being in the dead zone in Poltergeist. He even like communicates with his mom like by blinking lights and manipulating electronic objects, and I was like, it so reminded me of some of the stuff from, like, you know, Poltergeist when they were trying to communicate with Caroline.
And I gotta say, man, like, it was crazy. Like, at first I did not realize that the little girl was actually the same little girl from the Walking Dead TV
series.
If, like,
little baby Judith is is Mike's younger sister.
You know, and I mean, I'm almost waiting at point to be like, it's here.
Yeah, because there's even that one scene where after Will disappears, everyone just thinks he's missing. You know, his mom, played by Winona Ryder, is the only one that thinks like something took him, and she's been hearing the voices and the lights and stuff going off. Well, you know, Mike's mom comes over to try to console her, and the little girl kind of gets away, and she goes into his room, and this thing kind of starts like pushing out of the wall, and it reminded me of, like, you know, Caroline staring at the TV.
I mean, that, or, you know, I mean, I almost felt like it was, you know, very much old school Freddy Krueger.
Yes.
You know, how the walls would almost be like latex or something.
Yeah, it reminded me, like I said, the Upside Down reminded me a lot of, like, the Freddy Krueger dreamscape, because where he was, like, going from dream to reality and stuff like that. It reminded me a lot of that, you know, like I said, that's another thing that kind of, you know, homage to. Let's talk about Winona Ryder for a second, playing Joyce Byers. She, like, is legit losing her freaking mind in this movie,
show. Well, I mean, I was wondering if that was, you know, very early on, before you realize, you know, there's a monster involved, or, you know, a potential for a parallel universe or something. Like, before you get any of those facts, like, I was almost wondering if it wasn't going to be, you know, just some kind of psychotic episode all made up in her head. And,
yeah, because,
you know,
at first, she's the only one seeing these paranormal incidents. No one else is around when she sees this stuff, so it could almost be played off like, oh, she's crazy. Yes, your kid got taken by an alien, but you're also crazy.
Yeah, I mean, her acting just absolutely, you know, killed it, you know, here. I mean, just, it was so believable, and it just, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know how you begin to, you know, prepare for a role like that. But I mean, it was
because I don't have kids, but her, you know, portraying a mom who had literally like just had her kid like completely snatched. I mean, just her descent into almost madness, or at least that's what everyone thinks she's freaking crazy in. But she's definitely at her like wit's end.
I think she's at her wit's end, but I mean, you know, at the same time, like regardless of those around her or the doubts or anything to that effect, like she's like, yeah, I know this sounds crazy, but I'm not crazy.
Oh, and she goes to the store where she works and like you know, gets an advance on her paycheck and stuff to buy like light bulb, and then comes back later and starts buying freaking, you know, all these Christmas lights. And she's like, don't even start me. Like, I mean, she's kind of like a badass.
But I mean, how brilliant was that, though? I mean, stringing the lights up and having the alphabet, like, that was kind of creepy in itself.
The Christmas tree, or the Christmas light Ouija board thing on the wall. And that whole, like, you know, where are you? And he's like, right here. It's creepy as fuck. And that's when everybody comes in the house, they all, like, assume she's crazy because they don't see the lights doing the things. They just see all this crazy shit she's like put up and like cut holes in the wall trying to find the kid, and you know, everyone just assumes she's crazy, but she, at the same time, like, she will not give up her beliefs. I mean, the shady government group even makes a fake version of her kid's body and drops it in the quarry lake for them to find, and kid's dead, you know. And when she sees she's like, I don't know what the fuck that is in there, but it's not my son.
Well, it's like, you know, hey, he's got a birthmark on his, I think it was his right arm or something. Can I see it? And, you know, obviously.
But they never show whether or not it actually had it. Like, it cuts to, like, the kid, you know.
So I'm assuming that the birthmark was missing, and that was her clue, you know, is.
Yeah, but she comes out like, that's not my son. And you know, expect somebody who's been through that kind of trauma to not want to believe it. So, I mean, everyone just still thinks she's crazy until, you know, people start seeing, oh, she's not crazy. Because, like I said, you know, another character, which is, you know, Mike Wheeler's older sister, Nancy, played by Natalia Dyer, her friend goes missing at a party, and nobody knows where she is. And like I said, the shady government guys are trying to make it look like she ran away. And she sees this faceless creature, and then discovers like something in a photograph that Winona Ryder's character's son had taken a picture of, and when she describes like, oh, it didn't have any face, and he's like, oh shit, like I got to go apologize to mom because I've been calling her fucking crazy. Yeah. Oh, and then of course, you know, the sheriff or chief Jim Hopper, played by David Harbour, you know, at the same time he's like, you know, this was a big city cop, came back to be a chief of this small town. He's like, the 4 years I've been chief, nothing, the worst thing that's ever happened is an owl attacked somebody's head.
That's like, funny. It's like, confused it for a nest. I was like, yep.
But he's like, you know, starts finding these evidence and picking up on, you know, the government's being shady, because, you know, he finds like, it ends up tracking him back to that government lab, and they're like, oh yeah, here's the security footage. There's no way anybody came into the facility. And he's like, yeah, it wasn't in the video. There was no rain. And the night he went disappearing, it rained pretty hard. So they're lying to us for some reason. So it's like everybody's got their own thing. Like the kids are trying to find their friend and they're dealing with Eleven and her powers. You know, the mom is doing her weird poltergeist stuff. You know, Hopper's trying to uncover this government's conspiracy. And then the older brother and Nancy are trying to hunt this monster that's taking their friend. So it's like no one has the full story. Everyone's got their little piece of it.
And I think that's what, you know,
it is like, you know, searching it from like all these different angles.
And I thought that's what, you know, really helped, you know, captivate me, is because it's the same story, but you're seeing it from so many different perspectives. And, you know, until very late into the season, you're pretty much left to try to piece together and formulate your own opinion and theories and everything, and that was one of the things that really just, you know, absolutely kept me glued to the series.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's so many different stories until it all comes together. I mean, like from Hooper's perspective, it's a government conspiracy story. From Joyce's perspective, it's a paranormal event. And then, you know, the kids, it's like freaking Goonies, man. They're just trying to find their buddy and deal with this, you know, girl with weird, you know, Jedi-like superpowers.
Yeah, which is just freaking awesome. But, I mean, it's kind of cool, you know, just the way that she uses her, you know, powers and everything. I mean, that was one of the things that really felt like a throwback to E.T., because the only time they use their powers is when, you know, them collectively as a group are in some kind of absolute perilous situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a cross between Firestarter and E.T. the character of Eleven, because, like, and when we first see her, it's weird, too, because, like I said, there's this whole story with the drama going on with Will, and then all of a sudden this girl shows up, and, you know, gets caught trying to steal food at this diner. She's got, like, a shaved head and a hospital gown on and barely communicates. So you're like, what's this going on?
Yeah.
And, you know, the owner of the shop kind of, like, feeds her and starts getting a little bit of information out of her, but he calls family services, like, and but this is, like, really the first time we see the shady government group. I mean, we get like a little thing from the lab of some creature going off, but you have no connection between her and them and the creature yet. So when the supposed family services shows up, they end up shooting that dude in the head, and it's like these shady government agents, and she just like full on, you know, Jedi whammies them and like, you know, jacks up the guys and runs away again, and then ends up finding the kids. But it's like, you really don't know what her deal is. But then you start seeing stuff like in the flashbacks that kind of like show how she's been mistreated and tried to.
Yeah, I mean, she's just been a test subject all of her life.
Yeah,
they've
like, pretty much been trying to weaponize her.
Oh, you have this power, so, you know, how does your brain work? What differs? How do we, you know, manipulate that and you know, use it to our advantage or whatever? And I thought it was kind of cool, you know, them using, you know, kind of the whole deprivation tank angle, you know, for a lot of those experiments and, you know, how they kept saying, oh, you know, just think of it like this is your bath, or, you know, trying to make it seem innocent or whatever. And, you know, just the manipulation going on there
and
was.
Dr. Brenner, played by Matthew Modine, is the creepiest son of a bitch.
Yes.
Because he's like pretty much, because basically they steal this girl from her mother. You know, when she's a, you know, a baby, and they find out she's got, you know, these kind of powers, and he's been kind of telling her like, oh, I'm your papa this whole time, and using their kind of relationship to manipulate her into, you know, using her powers. And which kind of similar stuff from the Firestarter, but since she's grown up in this lab with no interaction with real people, you know, seeing the kids kind of trying to teach her to be a human. I mean, that's one of the things that remind me so much of E.T. is just like, you know, them teaching her to be human and teaching her about the real world. And then you have those scenes where she's alone in the house by herself and she's just kind of walking around exploring, messing with the TV. And it's almost exactly what E.T. did when he was by himself and roaming around Elliot's house.
You know, even the fact when they, you know, try to disguise her and be like, well, you know, she doesn't look like a normal girl, so they put the wig and the dress on her and stuff, you know, just like they did E.T., you know?
Yeah. I mean, but in this case, instead of Reese's Pieces, it was Eggo waffles.
I mean, a good, balanced, nutritional breakfast, you know?
That was the crack me up when she goes off on her own and just goes into the into the grocery store and steals nothing but Eggos.
I mean, that's what she's been fed. That's all you know.
Like, she's like, I know that I like this food. That's the food I'm going to get. Just walked out with like armloads of Eggos, and it's like nobody can stop her because she's, you know.
And there must be a subliminal message there because.
Yeah,
because
legit, I wanted Legos after I finished it, or made Eggos after I finished.
And legit, we went to the grocery store and bought Eggos. Figured out how to dial in that perfect setting on the toaster.
Yeah, because man, I haven't had Eggos in a long time. After that, I was like, man, I want some freaking Eggos, man.
So, I don't know, man. Like, there was a lot of nostalgia, but even outside of the nostalgia, I mean, just it's overall a very enjoyable series.
Yeah, because until I, like, you know, literally started watching the YouTube videos where they show shot-by-shot comparisons, yeah, it had the 80s nostalgia feel, but it wasn't, like, overpowering. Like, I didn't, like, immediately go, oh, this is this, and this is this, and this is this, other than, you know, comparing it to Goonies and E.T.
Which, you know, I mean, I love the fact, too, of how the, you know, the series was shot. Because it was shot with modern cameras and everything, yeah. But they just did that layer of film grain to give it that, you know, kind of 80s, you know, grainy yeah. appearance.
And even the, you know, 80s music, the theme and all like this, the synthesizer score of the whole thing. I mean, it looked like this was something that was shot in the 80s and, you know, just now came to light.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the band that did the synth production and everything else, I think they've actually got a, you know, full album or something coming out that I read about. And even, too, like the design, the Stranger Things, logo and stuff like that. You know, that design looks very familiar to a lot of other shows.
Yeah, because it wasn't done by the guy, I can't remember his name now, but he's the one that did a lot of those 80s title shots. So they tried to make it look like his work, and it kind of reminded me like something from a Stephen King movie, a John Carpenter movie, you know, the Thing. And there's even parts in the movie where they're watching The Thing, or there's yes. a Jaws poster on the wall, or an Evil Dead poster. I mean... I wasn't old enough to be those kids in the 80s, but you know, because I was like 4 in 83, but it was close enough that I'm like, I remember that time, and like I said, it's so much like nostalgia overload.
Yeah, I mean, it was just freaking awesome. So We're almost at the halfway point for the segment. Do we want to talk about some of our theories and, you know, things related to, you know, what we think, you know, the future may have in store?
Yeah, let's, like I said, let's talk about, like, each group's kind of...
Perception,
yeah. So let's start with Hopper and Joyce and their kind of... pursuit down the rabbit hole, because yeah, eventually they all come together. And once everyone has like the complete story, it
all makes sense.
They're like, oh, we're all on the same page. Let's do this thing. But I liked it was cool when they because like as soon as like Hopper like does not trust these lab guys, he starts doing the research and he finds these lawsuits where this lady tried to claim that they had taken her baby, which you know, never flat out says it. But we all assume it's 11. But they tied it into a real 80s thing, which was the MK Ultra experiments, yep. Which if anybody's not familiar with that, Google it, because that was the government doing some shady stuff where basically scientists were experimenting on people with LSD and seeing how that could maybe work on mind control experiments or, you know, the remote viewing experiments that they did. And supposedly this girl was one of the... MK, I mean, they even dose people. I mean, this is not fictional. This is like something that really happened. Like, dose people unsuspectingly with LSD just to see how they reacted. And supposedly this girl in the show was one of the MK Ultra experiments. And basically, like, she, I guess, did not realize she was pregnant while she was taking all this LSD. And that supposedly is what gave 11 her powers. And, you know, when they go track her down, he's just like completely freaking fried.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then like Hooper, like,
you know. Which I don't know, man, like toward the beginning of the series, like for me, I was almost wondering if Hooper wouldn't be in on the shadiness. I mean, it looked like, you know, looking at it, you know, it looked like he was battling, you know, maybe a pill addiction or alcoholism. Like, I was really like doubting the legitimacy of his character, yeah, as police chief in the beginning.
Yeah, because he definitely had some skeletons in his closet. But yeah, when he goes to track down the guy who found the body and kind of uncover that, oh, this guy was paid to find this body. Yeah, I like this. He just goes in like, you know, pretending he's just one of the boys at the bar, and you know, and then he's like, all right, the being nice doesn't work, so I'm going to go take this guy out back and, like, beat a confession out of him, which was a very 80s cop thing to do.
I mean, that's one good way to, you know, get some information out of somebody. I mean...
Oh, and then when he goes to the morgue and they've got the body, like, because they don't want anybody to get too close to it because it's a fake, and there's some, like, you know, state patrol guy there, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I left my hat here, I just need to go inside, And they're like, you know, your boss said it was okay. Like, and the guy's like, I don't work for that dude. He's like, well, all right, gonna have to do it the hard way again. Like, punch the guy out, and then cuts open the body and finds out it's a dummy. I mean, and yeah, that shit was like I said, their whole progression down the rabbit hole was cool. And then you had the older Jonathan, the older brother, and Nancy, who are basically, they're like, you know, there's a monster out there. We don't want to tell mom. She's got too much to deal with, but we got to go find this monster and rescue our friend or kill the monster. And I love it how Nancy starts off as the typical 80s high school girl, and then she just turns into like a total badass. Yeah.
I mean, that scene, man, like where they, you know, for all intent and purposes, kind of do the gear up montage where they're at the freaking surplus store. They're buying up, you know, freaking gas cans, ammo, bear traps, like just, you know, and the guy's like, what do you kids possibly want with all this stuff? Oh, we're looking for monsters, just nonchalantly. Yeah. Like,
Jonathan's like, she's like, we're hunting monsters. And he's like, okay.
I was looking for monsters. This would be the shit I would use too.
Yeah. And even that first time when, like, they meet out in the woods to go looking for the monster before they start gearing up, and Jonathan's out there trying to learn how to shoot, and he can't hit nothing. It, like, she, like, just nails it, like, the first try. I mean, she just goes, like, full. And then later on, when they try to set a trap for the monster in Joyce's house, like, she's just a total badass. Like, her boyfriend shows up, and she's like, you need to get the fuck out of here, because there's monsters coming.
It's like, what do you mean, monsters? I know what's really happening here. Like, I mean, that's, you know, once again, that was so, you know, cliche 80s, you know, where you had, you know, let's rewind back, you know, when they're at the high school and they find the photographs that he's, you know, taken of Nancy, and it's like, oh, well, I'm the big jock and this is my girlfriend, blah, blah, blah. So let me smash your camera and rough you up a little bit and show my male dominance, only to have my ass handed to me later on.
Yeah. Steve Harrington, played by Joe Keery. And it was because you, when you first see him, you expect him to be that typical 80s douchebag that, you know, pretends to be nice to get the girl, then just turns out to be, you know, the douchebag. Almost like in Goonies, the whatever Chet that was with the girls at the beginning before she, you know, hooks up with the Goonies older brother. Yeah, you expected that kind of twist, but then, like, you know, and he kind of goes down that road for a minute, but then he has like a whole.
I mean, he has that change of heart
where he's like, oh, I'm trying to be.
Oh, my friends are the assholes. Yeah. Like.
And I heard like originally that, you know, he was, because at the end of the show, they get back together, and they're like, you know, the original idea was like, no, she was going to end up with Jonathan, but he was just too charming, and that, you know.
Yeah, people liked him, that, you know, like.
Flip of character where he tried to make up for the bad he did, that, you know, they're like, we got to let him have the girl.
I mean, which was awesome, you know? I mean, I at first, like, that's really the direction I kept, you know, feeling like they were going is, you know, like, all right, you know.
The loser gets the girl, as most of those movies win.
But it was kind of cool for that progression to see the change of heart and, you know, for, you know, who, all intent and purposes, like, yeah, you're an asshole, like, you're going to be toast, like, oh, shit, like. Yeah. You know, I felt that same way. Like, shit, now I like the guy.
Yeah, and he even, like, tries to, like, chicken out and leave when the monsters start showing up, but he turns around and comes back and ends up, like, you know, saving the day in that
sense. Yeah.
So it was kind of cool that, like, you know, he got the girl, but then him and the outcast guy, they're all friends at the end. And, you know, he even replaces his camera that he broke. Yeah, they give him a new camera for Christmas because they're like, yeah, we're sorry, we broke your shit.
And, I mean, he still did get a kiss on the cheek, so, I mean, not all was lost.
No, he got a little action. And then the kids, I mean, oh, it was straight up, the, like, freaking Mike is what's his name, the main guy from Goonies, whatever, Dustin is definitely their version of Chunk.
And I love
and Lucas is pretty much, you know, mouth. Yeah, they just didn't have a data.
No, I don't know. I mean, as far as data is concerned, I mean,
I don't know. They had the science teacher.
Yeah, I mean, who,
who I love that character because like the kids would always like, all right, we've come across a weird science thing, and he you know, he really wouldn't ask like why they went. He like, it's like, so do you believe in like things from different worlds? And they're like, oh, you must be talking about this, yeah, scientific theory, and explains the whole thing about like, all right, you know, this is our reality, this is that reality, and you know, we can't see that other reality, but it just explains the whole science of upside down.
You know how he's given that explanation, and the whole time he's got a date at his house, and he's like, come on, kids, can this not wait till Monday? And they're just straight up well, we need the knowledge now. We want to learn. You know, why would you pause our learning capabilities? Yes. Like,
and that's like freaking Dustin, like I said, he's the one that's always conning him into giving them like the scientific, like, cause he's like, hey, how do we build a deprivation tank? And I'm like, what? Cause for science, that's why we need to know. Like, I was probably that kid, cause he's the one that's like, you know, Mike's all caught up in the drama of 11, and Lucas is like all like, you know, we got to go find it. He's the one that's like in the middle. That's like, you know, down for anything. Yeah. we gotta go kill this creature. All right, cool. Let's do this.
Yeah. I mean, it was just so awesome. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, like it's crazy. The heartfelt moments felt genuine. The action, you know, when it was supposed to be intense or suspenseful was there. And then just the, you know, humor of it all, you know, just.
Yeah, I love some of the reactions because, you know, like normally, you know, Mike and Eleven's like front and center in the things, but freaking some of the reactions of Dustin and Lucas when they're not like the focus of the scene in the back just steals the scene.
Yes.
Especially the one where they're trying to, Eleven asks what a promise means, and they're trying to explain to them, like, I heard what a promise is. And Lucas is like, yeah, promise is something you can't break, especially when Spit's involved. And like spits his hand and shakes Dustin's hand, trying to show like, you know, a Spit promise. And Dustin's just looking like, dude, did you just, like,
you spit in your hand.
Yeah. He just keeps looking like, why the fuck would you shake my hand? Like,
I mean, but that's something you would see straight out of like an old Western film or something. You like, know? Like,
he never says anything, but like, because you know, the scene goes on and they're still having this conversation, and he's the whole time he's like looking at Lucas like, what the fuck did you just rub spit on me? It's one of the scenes.
Was this
that
at all necessary?
So bad. Yeah, it's like, can you just explain? Like, did you have to demonstrate it?
Seeing is believing.
Oh, and when the school bullies try to fight Mike, and Eleven makes them piss themselves, and she just has that freaking like look like, sup, bro?
Yes.
And then later on, they try to get him to like jump into off the cliff, and she ends up levitating him. I mean, it's like some straight ET stuff, and just walks up and, like, freaking snaps the guy's arm. I mean, she's like, you know, gets more confident with displaying her powers to defend her friends. Like, you know, if. Like, I don't think she would have been the hero if it wasn't for the group, you know, teaching her what it is to be a buddy and, you know, having your friends back.
Well,
you,
I mean,
no
I think that's
what.
The difference between being a science experiment and making her genuinely, you know, I mean, at first, like, I'm almost wondering if she's not the antagonist or something, you know, like if she's about to go off the deep end and just level the city or something with her powers.
Like, go full carry.
But, you know, She doesn't, you know, she reserves herself, and, you know, once...
I know, she does pop some brains.
But, I mean, once again, you know, you can't necessarily say that wasn't deserved.
It wasn't
deserved,
yeah, those people were assholes. She should have popped their brains.
But, you know, I mean, she never used her powers, you know, unless her friends were in danger.
Yeah.
You know, and, I mean, dude, I just got to say, like, the whole scene where she picks up the van.
Yes.
And, like, I'm paranoid now, man. Like, I see all kinds of, like, carpet upholstery vans and, like, power vans.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, I'm like,
Oh, yeah. Back in the day.
I'm sketchy of everything.
The GMC white panel vans. Those were, like, you know, in any time there's, like, some shady surveillance stuff going on. It's a fake construction vehicle. That's like a staple of the 80s. Oh, yeah. I mean, I kind of wonder one of those vans back in the day. Those like 80s vans. I mean, between the A-Team and everything else, those 80s vans were badass.
But Let's see. So we touched on Hooper and Winona's perils, the kids' perils.
And then when they finally, you know, all come together, you know, Hooper and Joyce tries to go, actually goes to the lab because they've discovered that there is a, the portal. Because basically what it was is, like, they were trying to use her for remote viewing. And as she spent more time in this kind of, like, her powers almost, like, took her into, or at least close enough to that upside down thing that she gets the attention of the monster. And they, well, they're like, oh, there's this other thing. Well, let's now, instead of trying to spy on the Russians, let's see if we can contact this alien because, like, it'll make us famous or whatnot. And she kind of touches him and it ends up causing this link with our reality and lets him bust a slimy hole into our universe.
Yeah, but at that point, intergalactic, you know, portals were opened.
But then, like I said, when Hooper and Joyce try to go find that portal to get to the other side to find Will, you know, Hooper makes that deal with the devil. He's like, you know, I'll tell you where the girl is as long as you leave the kids alone and let us go in the portal and find her son. Like, he kind of like, this is what I, he
yeah, and nobody will mention a word of this.
Yeah, and he's like, nothing can find it. So they, you know, let him in. And try to go. And I like the fact that, like I said, very Star Wars heavy, that when they're like, we've been betrayed, they just look at each other and go, Lando. that's the short form, like, somebody's just set us up. But yeah, the like I said, once they all kind of start working together, that was just, like I said, there's so many things, like them in the alien world. And there's even that, like, hatched egg-looking thing that's very like aliens.
Well, I mean, I guess we'll talk about it in, because I got some theories.
And when they find him later, he's, like, hung up with, like, their version of a face hugger on his mouth. It's very much, like, goes full aliens at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, that, I don't know. It's like, I want a segue, because I'm like, all right. You've said it.
Now that it's, like I said, they saved the kid, all is supposedly well, and we jump a month into the future.
But and that's where all well.
Where all the conspiracy theories of what we're going to get out of a season two has popped up, because, you know, well, Eleven disappears, supposedly killing the alien. So we don't know if she's dead or what.
But then at the ending, you also had Will, who coughs up the freaking slug, and you have the flash of, yeah, you know, the parallel universe.
Let's go with Will's ending, his prologue. You know, he's back at home with his family. They're having Christmas dinner or whatnot, and he seems to be a normal kid. They're even back playing. And I do like how it goes back to them playing Dungeons & Dragons, yes, again. And they finish the quest, and he's like, "Yeah, that's it." And they're like, "What? That can't be it. There's so many."
What happened to the princess?
What happened to the lost knight? The princess, or what about the weird flower things in the cave? It's almost like, what about Hooper? What about Eleven? What about the freaking alien place, things?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost the same questions. Where he's like, "What? It was a 10-hour campaign." He's like, "No, there's still all these questions we got to answer." And like, "Yeah, we'll probably find that stuff out later." But then, yeah, when Will goes home with his family, he coughs up some kind of like slug looking thing and gets a flash of the upside down. And I'm like, I don't trust that kid. I'm expecting him to go full like chest burster in season two. I'm like, no. He spent too much time like with a freaking face hugger on him. Something's going to be bad about that kid.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is we've seen the hatched egg. So, one, I don't believe that there's just one monster.
No, not if he was.
I think there's multiples.
Because in the course of the show, they said there's like several people just besides Will and Barb and
a couple disappeared.
So if this thing is like the queen alien and like face hugging people, there's got to be more of those things out there.
I mean, the fact that he's, you know, essentially coughed up that slug now, it's gone into the drain. You've got to assume that that's going to have bigger implications,
yeah,
you know, in the modern world. Like,
and is that the only one he's coughed up? Because he doesn't tell his mom what just happened. That's why I don't trust that. He may be the Trojan horse.
Yeah, I mean, very well. You know, and I'm kind of wondering if that's not the thing. Like, you know, is that a false sense of relief that Will's home? You know, like,
yeah,
did we just bring back another interdimensional, you know, species, you know, into our dimension? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
And if there's this whole other universe, how is it we only see the one? I mean, there's got to be something else out there.
Well, they only explored, you know, what happened within their tiny town.
Yeah,
so,
if the whole world, there's a dark version of the whole world, there may be other stuff out there.
And I think that, you know, going back to the Dungeons and Dragons campaign, I mean, it was the Demogorgon that they were, you know, fighting before. I forgot what the new monster.
It was the Hydra that was the thing.
Yeah, with the multiple, you know, heads or whatever. So...
Hail Hydra.
You know, I'm wondering, you know, if maybe that is the queen. You know, maybe this monster we've seen is just a pawn in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, it could be one of the soldier aliens and not the queen alien. Yeah, because like I said, it's... Because we got a very limited look at that other dimension. And there definitely could be bigger implications.
And I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, I mean, when the government officials go into that other dimension... I mean, they're loaded for bear, you know, and everything. You know, when, you know, Hooper and Winona Ryder's character enter, you know, they're there with flashlights and handguns, and they've made it further in than the...
Now, Hopper had an MP5.
Yeah. Oh, did he have the MP5? I couldn't remember. Like, but, I mean, still, like, they're two. Yeah. You would like to think that, you know, those government officials probably had more combat training and everything.
But Hopper's a badass, so I mean, that's...
Hopper is a badass, I mean...
Plus, the alien really wasn't around. Because, like, while they were dicking around trying to find Will, that at the same time, that monster was on our reality trying to kill Nancy and Jonathan.
That's
and
when
them.
We got our Freddy Krueger montage and set him on fire.
Yeah, pretty much. And then... you know, the kids are doing their thing at the high school with all the government guys trying to attack them, and she, you know, force kills everybody. Well, that causes a lot of blood, and as we know, like Jaws, this thing's attracted to blood, so now it's back in our reality again. So when they were over there, there really wasn't anything for them to fight. They never really came across the monster. They just found Will and got him the hell out there because, you know, everyone else was kind of keeping the monster busy on this side of reality.
So, I mean, you know, I still got a lot of questions from that aspect. And I got to say, like, that whole freaking tree scene with the deer, too. Like, that was just freaky.
I about pooped myself.
I was like, oh, that's no bueno. Don't chase the deer carcass.
Yeah. Oh, because, yeah, it just gets kind of, like, dragged into a tree. Yeah, I was like, yeah, that's never going to be good. And then we have what happened to, as they say, what happened to the Lost Knight, you know, Hopper's character, like, what's his deal now? Because after they find Will, supposedly all the shady government guys got eaten by the monster, but they never really showed Doctor, you see it jumped the doctor, but you never see, like, the aftermath of it. So, don't know if he's still
around. I mean, I kind of almost wonder if he isn't, you know, the Trojan horse. You know, and a lot of these experiments and stuff like that are... for his benefit, you know, if he knows a lot more than what he's really alluding to. I don't know.
Yeah, because, I mean, if they've been doing shady stuff with her since she was, like, a little kid.
And,
you know,
and the fact, too, that
her
she's...
Her tattoo is 11. Like, well, where's 1 through 10?
Well, and that's my point exactly, is, you know, throughout the course of time, how many others have there been, and what are their stories? You know, where are they now? Are they now... face huggers and, you know, they find themselves, you know, through the portal or, you know, what? Because the portal still exists. It was never closed, so...
I mean, she may have closed it when she went all Jedi and destroyed the creature.
But I don't think so, because at the end, when you see, you know, Hooper go back and he puts the Eggos in the box, like, wherever she is now, like...
Well, that's one of my theories. When she says goodbye to everyone and disappears with the monster... That, like I said, showing we're... Well, let's hold on that for a second. Go back to finishing talking about Hopper. Like, after they found Will and stuff, you see the shady government black car and the men in black get out and him go off with them. And then it jumps ahead a month and he's still chief and stuff. What happened to him with the government guys? Was that just a debrief or was it a job application? Like, is he working for the shady government group now?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, or do they have, you know, kind of the Men in Black, you know, flashy device that just wipes your memory and...
I mean, obviously not, since he's leaving food for, supposedly leaving food for 11 with the Eggos in the box in the middle of the woods. But like I said, I almost think he's going to be...
It's a peace offering.
I almost going to think he's going to be like the show Eureka, where they had the town sheriff that kind of watched over all the shady scientist guys to make sure they didn't blow up the world. Like, they're, you know, when this happened, they're like, all right... This guy kicked ass. we need someone here to kind of be our liaison with the outside. You know, so if something like this happens again, we know we have an asset in town that can, you know, keep an eye on things, or vice versa. Like, hey, we're not going to shut down the shady government thing, but we need like somebody that's a good dude that can watch over these guys to make sure they don't blow up the world. So we don't know if he's a good guy still, or if he's a bad guy, or if he's playing like both sides, trying to do the best thing.
I mean, I think that's it. I think he's trying to play both angles, you know? All right. So, you know, you keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer type thing. So,
like, if I'm on the outside, I'm not going to be able to check up on these dudes. But if they think I'm working for them, I can try to protect my town and my people the best way I can.
And you also gain the knowledge on, you know, maybe you can earn their trust, maybe learn a little bit more about the experiments, the ins and outs of, you know, the organization, that type of thing. I don't know. Either that, or maybe he was a decoy all along, and, you know, just like they had their, you know, little group of officials where it was always that one head lady that, you know, oh, I'm with Child Services, or, you know what, I'm an FBI agent, or whatever the case is, like, you know, maybe they've kind of, you know, put him in that role, and, you know, he's...
Yeah, because definitely the leadership of that base has kind of been, looked like they were wiped out, so... Yeah, you know, there may be a new group running the, you know, maybe a friendlier group running the establishment now. You know, who knows? But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where his character goes next season.
Well, I mean, that's the thing too. Like, you know, there were rumors that, you know, a season two is confirmed. As of now, there isn't a confirmation. So,
but it's almost like, you know, the Punisher series. I mean, they have to at this point. I heard it's going to jump like maybe a year in event, just because the kids are all kind of hitting puberty now. So they're
well, that was the thing, is, you know, one of the kids like was going through puberty so hard, like they had to omit his lines because
they couldn't use him for any like voiceover like later on, because like I said, his voice changed too much. So yeah, they're kind of like jumping forward in time just to, you know, because the kids are growing up so much between this production and possibly the next production. But then, yeah, no one knows really what happened to 11, because, I mean, she made that sacrifice move that you always see in, like, 80s movies where someone has to kind of, you know, jump on the proverbial grenade. But, like I said, with him dropping off, you know, a package in the woods, I don't think she's really gone. I think almost like she felt like this was her fault, because she's the one that caused the connection to have the gate open up. So I think she crossed over and is kind of like, you know, holding the wall. She's over there making sure they don't come into our world. She's keeping the doors shut.
Yeah.
You know, if
anybody could control, you know, that portion, it's going to be her with her, you know, abilities, you know, I mean.
And if that thing could pass through our reality through these little holes, she probably can too. So, you know, if she's over there, you know, guarding the gate, you know, Hopper drops her off some Eggos occasionally, and she can, you know, pop through the tree hole, grab her Eggos, and go back to the other side and keep the gate closed.
I don't know. Definitely a lot to ponder. Yeah, I mean,
they have to bring her back for season two. It's just
no. I mean, she was too much of a pivotal, you know, story. You know,
they're not doing like an American Horror Story where it's going to be a completely different story for the next season. No, it's still going to take place in this town with this group. So I think not having her in a potential second season would not make any sense. I mean, they pretty much have to bring her character back somehow.
I don't know. I'm with you. I think that they can't do away with her character completely. I mean, maybe there's, you know, maybe for the first couple of seasons, you know, or first couple of episodes, maybe they bridge some of those gaps and, you know, shift the story a different angle or something. But I think at least for some duration, they're going to have to give a little bit of closure or more insight, or who knows, you know? I mean,
yeah,
they may fast
not
forward the timeline and wait till the, you know, end of the series before they reintroduce her or something, just to, you know, completely mindfuck folks.
Yeah, because she's definitely not back in the lab, because, yeah, if Hopper's working for the weirdo government guys, I mean, he could bring her Eggos at the lab. You know, he doesn't have to drop them off in the woods. Like I said, I think she crossed over, and she's the one that's holding reality together at this point, so those things can't, you know, venture over. But if they're already here via Will's puked up lizards. You know, they may have to call her back to clean up the foothold that's left behind.
And I mean, that's the other thing too, is, you know, very much like Aliens. You know, when we see, you know, Will originally with the freaking tube of slugs, I mean, you know, Barb's corpse was already, you know, or what we assume is her corpse anyway, is there. But, you know, how do we know that's not just a host? And all of a sudden we're about to have like a huge infestation of these things.
Yeah, like I almost guarantee that kid goes full chest burster. Look, I do not trust him.
Yeah. Hopper, get that MP5 ready.
Yeah. Shit's about to get real.
We gotta go hot.
Oh. And like I said, I'm interested to see whether or not the doc survived, because, you know, the monster jumped on him, but it never, you know, 80s horror movie rules. If you don't see a body, stuff may come back to haunt you.
Well, and I mean, I kind of liked how it followed the, you know, it kind of broke some of the rules, you know. I mean, by, you know, cliche horror movie standards, I mean, Nancy, you were, you know, a decent person, but you were making some bad life choices. Like, you know, I mean, standard horror movie rhetoric, you got boyfriend one over here, but you're kind of, you know, going down this other path over here. Like, you're lying to your mom, you know.
That is true. Like, you know, in traditional 80s horror movie, it's the virgin that survives. You know, Barb should have been the one. She shouldn't have got killed by the aliens. She wasn't the one being slutty.
Yeah, she was the good girl. You know, I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to do this. Like,
but nope, you get eaten anyway. So yeah, they did. They did break some of those 80s rules.
So I don't know that all rules can apply in this circumstance.
True, because, you know, that thing didn't leave a whole lot of other people alive if he wasn't, you know, turning them into face huggers. So yeah, he definitely made short work of all the military guys. So yeah, we may or may not get the doc back. But yeah, that dude, like I said, if they remake, like, was it Phantasm, he could be the tall man. I mean, that dude was legit
no
creepy.
Like, when I you know, when I first saw his character, and then after, you know, his first couple of lines of dialogue, that's exactly what came to mind, was the tall man.
So as we kind of wrap up here, any final thoughts on the Eye of the Shark? It's the Eye of the Shark. It's the I don't know. Every time I think about the cigar, man, the freaking Eye of the Tiger pops in my head.
You know, I got to say, it was complex, but not like super complex. I don't know. Weird description there. But, you know, I would say that it did pick up, you know, slightly on intensity toward the middle and then the final third of the cigar. You know, so that was a nice, you know, change of pace. You know, the spice became more prevalent. But it wasn't, you know, super, you know, black pepper or anything of that effect. You know, it was a good smoke. But, you know, honestly, it kind of left me wanting, you know, it felt like it was kind of missing something too, though. I don't know what it was.
If it was a little more peppery, like the Opus, like I said, it has the pepper, but it doesn't have that intense, like, peppery, stuff I'm used to with some of the Fuente, cigars.
I mean, I would say it's absolutely a good cigar. I wouldn't necessarily say it's phenomenal. But I mean, you know, if I was at a, you know, cigar bar or somebody, and, you know, somebody walked up and offered one or handed one to me or whatever, I absolutely would not turn it down.
No, I mean, it's a good solid smoke.
You know, I just probably wouldn't be, you know, there's other Fuente cigars that I would, you know, get a box of before this one.
Yeah, I mean, I like it, but I would still go with the Añejo. If I had my, if it was between this and Añejo, I would go with the Añejo, but you can't find Añejos half the time. So, I mean, that's why that one's so good, is because you only get it twice a year, and like, it's super limited quality. I mean, limited availability.
Yeah, I mean, this one is really good. And then, you know, when you can find it, the Unnamed Reserve is another one that's really exclusive, but really good when you do find it.
One final thought on the show, the music. Like, the clash, should I stay or should I go, like, has a big part in the movie. And
yes.
That made me fall down a full-on 80s YouTube hole the other night. I don't know how many clash and an old 80s thing. I mean, and they're supposed to be releasing a soundtrack. I mean, you can download it on iTunes. But, like, people have gone and put together a playlist of all the 80s music that's in the show, and like I end up watching that for like an hour the other night on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, the soundtrack absolutely made it. I mean, you know, just that heavy synth and everything, just I don't know, man, like that was just another thing. It was, you know, down on Nostalgia Street, you know. I feel kind of bad for the, you know, people watching this that don't quite, you know, have enough, you know, age or experience under their belt to really get that nostalgia factor,
because yeah, they're 80s rock and roll.
Really missing out in life.
I mean, it could use a little bit more hair metal if we're gonna talk about the 80s. But yeah, it was definitely, you know, 80s pop heavy. Speaking of the 80s, I don't know how many times people have been Rickrolled. I saw the best Rickroll the other day on Facebook. It was the picture of the Christmas light Ouija board, and it's like flashing, you know, the different things. And if you start reading it, it's not flashing like Will's dialogue. No, it's spelling out "never gonna let you go." I'm like, oh, motherfuckers.
That is awesome.
So props to whoever came up with that one. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine, the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well, come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for Beer 30. So what are we drinking today, Brad?
Well, this week we've got
something.
Looks
like motor oil.
Yeah, it very much resembles motor oil. We're drinking Evil Twin Brewing Glaze, the Imperial Donut Break. And this is quite an interesting and strange brew.
Yeah, it's apparently an addition of their Imperial Biscotti Break, which had flavors of sugar and bittersweet almonds with coffee. And this one, they added donuts to the flavor.
Lots and lots of donuts. I gotta say, man, like, this is a phenomenal, you know, I would say either a breakfast or a dessert beer. You know, it's sweet. It's going to be, you know, a little bit too sweet for some palates, but you know, as a dessert or something to that effect for me, I mean, this is right on the money. You know, the donut flavor comes through. There's a lot of coffee. So you get that roasted malty flavor and just, you know, everything that I would want out of, you know, something called the Imperial Donut Break.
Yeah, it is an Imperial Porter, so it definitely has that coffee flavor. But yeah, this one has a lot more sugar and bready flavor than your normal porter.
I mean, can we get Dunkin' Donuts to, like, get this on tap or something? I mean,
like, dude, buy some donuts. We just, like, dip them in it, like Oreos and milk.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, it'd be all the way up. I don't know, man. Like,
drunk,
and
I got a sugar high.
I mean, we've drank the who was it? The Voodoo, the maple bacon donut. It's in the big pink bottle, and
yeah.
I gotta say, I was not a fan of that really at all. Like, all right, cool novelty, whatever. Did nothing for my palate. I was just like, I don't even want to finish it. But this, I mean, it still feels and tastes like a beer. But I feel like I could drink it at 7 o'clock in the morning and still be okay.
No, I'm just having my morning coffee.
Yeah, I mean, dude, you pour in a coffee cup, nobody's going to notice the difference.
Yeah, it is 11.5% alcohol, though, so you may want to have just one for breakfast and not like a six-pack.
I mean, I only had one bomber.
I just had the morning donuts.
Oh, man. Like, this is really like, I mean, you could take a glazed donut or something and dip in this. Like, dude, that would work. Like,
warm Krispy Kreme?
Exactly. Like,
yeah, I mean, if you've never had Krispy Kreme fresh out the oven when the light is on and it just melts in your mouth, dude, like one of those dipped in this. Oh.
Dude, I think for Con, we got to do it. Like, screw complimentary continental breakfast. Like,
donuts
this right
beer.
Here is the breakfast champions. Like,
yeah, we may have to pick up a couple of these to take with us.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they weren't exactly what I would consider budget-friendly, but, I mean, it wasn't insanely expensive. I mean, you know, anybody that's, purchased anything by Evil Twin, they probably know the price point that, you know, most of their beers run. But, you know, I don't know. I was looking at it because I was like, huh, this is strange. Typically, we stay away from fruity-style beers and, you know, just IPAs in general, you know, so this was a little bit of a gamble, and I'm really glad that we took it. Like, I really can't say anything bad about this.
It's not, I mean, it goes down smooth, too. I mean, for something with an 11.5% alcohol, there's no alcohol taste to it. I mean, it just goes down smooth, like, you know, a freaking coffee, like a mocha coffee, whatever you call the cold coffee these days.
Yeah, I mean, dude. I mean, this would almost work like an iced coffee. I don't know. I mean, you know, it being a porter, it isn't, you know, as, you know, intense in the coffee flavor as what you would think an imperial stout or something to that would be. But it's just well-balanced, very complex, and just, I mean, shit, dude, after dinner, like, I could see myself sitting down with this and, you know, just really enjoying myself. So, I don't know. You know, I think as far as my skill's concerned, I'm probably at a 4.75 on this one.
I mean, I'm going to have to give it a 4.5 because I don't have a donut to dip in it. So, I mean, after I get some donuts, it may go up another half point.
Yeah, absolutely. Just real quick, you know, for the sweetness to you. I mean, does it fill over the top? I mean,
No, I mean, it's sweeter than a normal porter, but I think the bitterness of the coffee kind of balances it out.
Yeah, I mean, well balanced. I think that, you know, proper glassware and proper temperature is what's going to, excuse me, make or break that sweetness for folks. So
what are you? Oh yeah, we already gave it the untapped rating. I was too busy concentrating on my beer. 4.75,
fool. Where were you?
I was drinking my beer. I wasn't listening to you.
11.5's already kicked in.
Exactly. All right, and we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Hey guys, are you looking for a new podcast to listen to? Something a little on the geeky side, but lots and lots of fun with some crazy dudes? Well, have I got something for you. It's called the Vitamin Geek Podcast. I'm the host, Corey Keelan, and I'm here with my friends, Eric Williams.
What's up?
Patrick Sykes.
Greetings, everyone.
And Michael Zippy Miller.
Hey there.
We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. Horror movies, science fiction. We love Star Wars. Who doesn't love Star Wars? If you don't like Star Wars, get the hell off of here. Check us out, man. Vitamin Geek Podcast right here on the ESO Network.
It's all part of the plan.
And now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for the Dragon Con update. You know, last year we did a whole newbie's guide episode to Dragon Con. But, you know, instead of rehashing all that, we decided to talk about, you know, what's new this year and kind of give you an update, try to answer some questions. And with us, we have Dice from Dragon Con Security, our buddy, occasional guest host, Norm.
How's it going?
So
happy to be here.
As probably the busiest chapter of the Dragon Con volunteers, are you even close to being ready yet?
Not even close. And I won't say that we're the busiest. I will probably give that distinction to Tech Ops because...
Yeah,
they have to show up on, like, Tuesday to start loading nowadays.
Is anybody ever truly ready for Con, though?
I'm ready for Con probably Monday at about 4 o'clock.
Yeah, the following month, like after it's over. No,
the con, the last day of con when we're packing everything up. I think I'm ready to start Dragon Con then.
Oh yeah, with so far they've announced and anticipating record breaking numbers this year. I think the final count for last year was around 70,000. They're expecting around 75 this year is the early estimate.
And that, and I've always thought that those counts are really conservative.
Yeah. Like I said, we'll see how it how it all ensues. So one of the things, like I said, normally there's certain things you can count on at Dragon Con. Yeah, the things are, there's, you know, the content changes, but the locations usually don't. But this year they've decided to mix up the whole playing board and move stuff around. So if you're a veteran Dragon Conner and you're expecting to go one place, you're probably going to have to go somewhere else. The highest thing to recommend is download the Dragon Con app. When it finally does update with all the panel information, that information should be there. But today we're going to go over some of the big changes we know about.
That we can remember.
Yeah. And there's no guarantees these won't change in the week between this podcast coming out and Dragon Con coming out. Because
that's right.
Everything is in flux.
Yeah, due to all of the construction and renovations happening at some of these hotels, things that they thought were going to move went back to where they were. Other things have moved completely to the opposite sides of the footprint.
I know one of the big ones that was supposed to move but did not was registration. So
yeah, registration, I believe, was supposed to move to the Hilton.
Yeah.
But due to renovations and construction, that wasn't going to work.
So when you go to pick up your badges, it's in the
back
at
the
usual
the same place
location.
Always.
So that won't be too confusing. So what's some of the changes you have on your list?
Who's moved? I believe Steampunk Alternate History track has moved to America's Mart.
Yeah, America's Mart number 2. They're going to the fourth floor. I believe it's room 204 I and J. So if you're used to going to the Westin, they have now moved over, you know, next door pretty much to the America's Mart. And what's kind of come into their place, one of the biggest moves, is all the Dragon Con gaming tracks have now moved to the Westin and the America's Mart too.
Yeah.
Which that's a couple years ago, that's where the dealer's room was before it moved over to the America's Mart 1 building. So as from what I've read, all the actual gaming is going to be in America's Mart, and then all the gaming related panels and parties will now be in the Westin, which is where we're staying. So if we want to get our game on, we can just go downstairs. Yeah,
I think it's a smarter move too, anyway, because I never quite liked the idea of, you know, gaming being in the bowels. Like,
yeah, that's going to be a lot. I think this, like,
yeah, it's got its detractors too, because a lot of people there are people that come to Dragon Con.
Oh yeah,
and they game.
Oh yeah,
and
absolutely.
They're not here for panels. They're not here for autographs. They're not here for the parade. They're here to
one of the
game
guys
with their friends.
I was rooming with. That's all he did. Like, he barely saw anything other than the gaming room. And this move is, if you are a gamer, has added them a lot more square footage. Their area, I think, is nearly tripled than what they've normally been. And I saw an announcement today that they've made a deal with Joystick Game Bar. So there's going to be a bunch of arcade games there set on free play in the Dragon Con gaming area that partnership.
And I believe along with this year's announced partnership with MomoCon is also bringing, I think one of the Japanese game developers, I don't remember all the details, but they're bringing things like the Dance Dance Revolutions and those larger format games.
Yeah, they're
going to
have the Japanese arcade on one side and then classic American arcade on the other, but they're all going to be in those two hotels there.
So
may not leave.
Yeah, the move is letting them do a lot more. And as anybody that's come to con before knows, space is at a premium in a lot of these track areas.
Do we know what's replacing them in the Hilton yet?
That's the thing. I haven't heard if anything is replacing them down there. I don't know, even know if that space is going to be available.
Yeah,
at all.
They're doing a lot of construction
because of
that
the
place,
renovation.
So if not, I'm assuming some panels will get moved in that area. But that's one of the things that's still in flux, and we don't know anything about.
Yeah, and a lot of track space that already exists in Hilton, the rooms are relatively small.
Yeah.
And those panels over the years have gotten way more popular on like the Skeptics track. And
yeah, Skeptics track. I heard the podcasting track has kind of outgrown its space, so it may be moving into some of that areas.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far that's just rumor. Like I said, check your Dragon Con app when you get there.
Yeah.
Also, I know, how was it, the Artist Alley, who used to always be in the Hyatt
basement. Yeah, that was the Hyatt.
Now that's moving over to America's Mart 1 with the regular dealer's room. So now that's all going to be in one location. So, you know, you can get all your stuff at one stop.
You can buy all your stuff in the same place.
Yeah, and just go ahead and blow all your
stop shopping.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. Everyone does it. You know it.
You can pick up your art, get your comic book signed, and pick up your Utilikilt without ever leaving the same building.
Get your Utilikilt.
Yeah.
We are not sponsored by Utilikilt, but we are taking offers.
Yeah, I saw someone post in one of the Dragon Con forums was like, if you're in the newbie's guide, like if you see someone in Utilikilt, feel free to ask them questions. They're probably on the staff.
It's odd how many of us wear the Utilikilts. It's not odd, but I mean, it's... Hey, they're comfortable.
Gotta give me a new one, man. I got like... quit working out and like I got fat again. I only got my traditional kilt now.
You've got 2 weeks.
Yeah, I need to starve for the next 2 weeks.
Subsist on cigars and whiskey for 2 weeks so you can lose weight.
So is there anything else that you know of that has vastly changed?
I believe the Stargate track has a new name. I believe it's something like the military sci-fi track,
yeah, I think,
where they've incorporated like Babylon 5 and a few other shows.
I mean, for a while there, Stargate was big enough to hold its own track, but I think, you know, since it's been off the air for a few years, so now they've kind of taken some of that stuff and combined it, like with Battlestar and...
Yeah, Battlestar's included in that.
You know, a few others to flesh it out.
If it has a military focus to it... and it's not covered under one of the larger tracks like Whedonverse or something like that, goes with them.
So if you what was that one like very military Space Above and Beyond?
That would probably fall under the. But things like S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
still falls under Whedon Universe.
Yeah, like it's part of the Avengers.
It's part of the Avengers and the MCU, which still falls under Whedonverse stuff. Aren't there? I believe they're also located in Weston, but I don't know that they're moving.
Yeah, I've not seen that yet. I know there's far too many parties going on Thursday night for me
because
that's another thing too. Thursday has always been the show up, register, chill out, but this year there's actually official events going on Thursday night.
I think, you know, it can be dubbed that Con officially starts on Thursday this year.
Yeah, I mean, they've the wrestling.
Hey. The official word is that is a soft opening to Dragon Con.
And I'm going to try not to say anything about soft openings. But I know the wrestling event has been moved to Thursday. I know our good buddy Dr. Q is hosting a Nerds New Year's Eve party in the Marriott, which I believe starts at like 8 o'clock and
it's 8:30.
Yeah, and goes all the way to, you know, post midnight. It's like I said, the official start of Dragon Con countdown. So if you're looking someplace to dance, check that. Also, I saw a cool one, the gaming tracks putting on in the Westin. It's the, was it the 8-bit
bash?
Yeah,
they're doing the 8-bit ball.
And it's going to be all like 70s and 80s music with DJ Spider.
Yep. By my count, from what I know, right now there are 11 different parties and gatherings happening in the various hotels just on Thursday night.
Yeah, and we've got...
And that's not even counting our cigar meetup over at...
Yeah, that's one of the things that if you are a cigar smoker and you want to come hang out with the cigar nerds, the new Prohibition-style bar, Red Foam Booth, is hosting us at... starts at 8:30 on Thursday. If you go to Facebook and look up the Dragon Con Cigar Group, all the information is in there, and there's also a... so you'll be able to find it's such a exclusive place. You have to know the special code to get in. So the code will be posted there, if you know somebody cool enough that has it, like, you know, me and Norm here, we can get you in.
Maybe. Bribery is welcome.
Yeah. Hey. I mean, we're debating if we give the code to Brad.
Pie is accepted.
Yeah, pie is an official bribery at Dragon Con. If this is your first year, you must learn what pie is and find someone that can share it with you.
We can talk about pie for a second, I guess, just to tell what it is. Yeah. If you've never heard of pie, if you're listening to this you've never heard of pie.
It's almost a Dragon Con exclusive, because you go to other cons. I have not seen it that... The only people I see that have it are Dragon Con people that just happen to be at this other con that I'm at. It's not as widespread as it is at con.
Yeah, and I'll remember
from the pie cast we did last year.
You can talk about pie, bro.
Yeah, so, I mean, I did several gallons last year that I took with us, and I mean, I'm not going to give out my recipe or anything. That's my trademark. But, you know, for folks that haven't tried pie or anything, I mean, I'll just say that it is very dangerous and very delicious.
Yeah, it's basically alcoholic apple juice, because it doesn't taste that much different from cinnamon apple juice, but the alcohol content is
massively higher.
It is the official currency of Dragon Con,
pretty much.
So, yeah, come meet up with the cigar nerds. Yeah, we'll have pie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also Thursday night, which by the time this goes up, it may be sold out. There's a show in Arrange 15 going on at the, was it the Landmark Theater in Buckhead?
Yes.
Which is about a mile, 2 miles from the show. So it's walking distance if you're adventurous. But those guys are actually going to have, I know at least one of the cast members is going to be there, and they're going to have a fan table. Probably in the Marriott, where the fan tables usually are.
I believe the Rhino's going to be there too.
Yeah, Rhino will be there. Is it Jack Mandeville, who was in Range 15? He's confirmed to be there. I don't know if anybody else is coming yet or not. That's still kind of to be determined.
But just to put this out there, so you know, if you're looking for a skit, there's already a website out that has a list of published public parties. And it's deconparties.com, which is where I put together the 11 list just for Thursday. But they have several things of all the big parties that are happening over the weekend listed right there for you. You don't need to wait for the app. You can plan out your party schedule ahead of time.
And I mean, that's just freaking Thursday night stuff we've talked about.
We're not even getting into the rest of the week.
Even the Bunny Hutch
Bunny Hutch too. It's also in the Marriott.
It's going to be a busy weekend. I mean, and this is our first time going as official media, and we still have no clue where we're going to be and what we're going to be doing. So if you want to keep up with what we're doing, definitely follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. On Twitter and Instagram, we're at Cigar Nerd Pod. So like I said, that's where I'll be kind of documenting our adventures for the weekend. And if you want to come have a smoke with us, feel free to message us on one of those services, or just email us at cigarnerdpodcast@gmail.com, because I'm sure I will be checking it at some point, depending on my level of alcohol consumption.
And the availability of cell and internet service, considering that close to 80,000 people are going to be doing the same.
Well, over the years, cell service has gotten markedly better.
I don't know. I'm just really curious what Pokemon Go is going to do to cell service this year.
I'll say this now. There is no Pokemon Go on the habit trails. Just like no photographs, please. No Pokemon. Don't stop and catch your Charizard or your Pikachu. Maybe Pikachu.
If there's a Pikachu, because I've seen that bastard twice and he's got away both times, I will have to stop for a Pikachu.
You will have a volunteer yelling at you to keep moving, please.
So from the security end of things, do you have any suggestions or warnings for people coming this year?
Well, and something that I saw on one of the Facebook groups, Dragon Con Facebook groups recently, was about badges. The little pieces of laminated paper that everybody gets to attend the con. You need to have it with you at all times while you're on premises, because you will be asked many times to show it.
Just to
get in the building.
Yeah, and at certain hours, they don't even let you in the building unless you have your badge.
Or a hotel room key.
And believe me, saying badges, we don't need no stinking badges, does not work. They don't find that as funny.
We've heard it already.
Because they've heard it a lot.
Yes, when you're the 90th person that says badges, we don't need no stinking badges, that gets old really fast.
Also, but yes, waving your hand like a Jedi and say, these are not the badges you're looking for, does not work.
But what we ask, just make sure that you secure it. Wear a lanyard. When you pick up your badge, they'll give you a little clip-on thing. Yeah. Do not use it. They will pop open at the most inopportune moment. There are lots of crowds in these hotels.
Yeah, you're constantly brushing up against somebody in one of these crowded areas.
It may not even be deliberate. Somebody will brush against you. It will pop open. You will walk up to your panel. You'll be asked for your badge, and you don't know where it is.
Yeah.
If you've lost your badge, there's a fairly good chance if it's turned in, it will end up in one of our security operations offices. A lot of badges get turned into us.
Yeah.
And those are located. There's one in the Marriott. There is one in the Hyatt.
Yeah,
follow the signs. You will find us.
Still in the same location, lowest level of the Marriott.
The Marriott location has moved to the lobby level.
Ah.
So if you go to the lobby level, you go past the little convenience store in the Starbucks down to the next hallway, it should be right there.
That's kind of convenient too, because it was always weird having to
go downstairs
separate from the security area.
Yeah, we've moved up a little bit.
Also, I know y'all are, if you're wanting to come and you want to save a little money and you want to try to volunteer, you guys are probably the one group that's always looking for volunteers up until like the day of.
Yes, we are accepting volunteers even first day of the convention and during. So if you want to come and help out and volunteer and see the show, we ask for a little bit of your time, about 20 hours over the whole 4 to 5 days, and $20. Easy peasy.
Big cut down from the
versus $160 that you had to pay on site.
So moving on, like I said, last year when we did our kind of newbies guide, you know, Brad, it was kind of your first year too, or at least first year in a long time. Is there anything that you learned after going to Dragon Con that we may have not have covered, or something that you didn't realize you didn't know till you got there?
I think the thing that we missed out on, or that I missed out on, was, you know, just prepping and keeping, you know, snacks or something on my person. Like, I made the mistake of leaving stuff in the room a lot of the time. And, I mean, it's a hall. There's, you know, a lot of people. It takes a lot of time to, you know, cover a relatively short distance. And, you know, that was a mistake I made. So, you know, for me this year, I'm going to have a backpack or something that I can, you know, stow away relatively easy on my person that's not going to be large and bulky. You know, that way I have refreshments. And, you know, the other thing is...
Hydrate.
Yeah, I mean, that was the other thing.
Oh, yes, please.
You know, there was lots of alcohol consumption, little water consumption. At the end of the day, I was probably going back to the room and, you know, drinking a gallon of water to rehydrate and replenish myself.
And if you do nothing else, go to somewhere and buy you some, like, padded shoe inserts, or have some good walking shoes.
Yeah, if your costume, you know, calls for dress shoes or something to that extent, like, bring a backup pair of shoes that are broken, that are comfortable. I mean, you know, we tracked our distances last year, and we were covering, what, 26, 27 miles a day on our feet?
You're basically walking a marathon every day. Oh, yes. Tracking God.
All right. Shoes. If you're listening to this and you have not started breaking in whatever footwear you plan on wearing for the con, you're behind the curve. You need to start now. Wear them every day just to break them for a little while, just to break them in.
Oh, yeah. When I dress in my steampunk gear, usually I got some nice dress shoes, but I was like, nope, I'm a time traveler. I'm wearing sneakers to the alternative history stuff, because I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's cool when I go to a steampunk convention where I'm all in one hotel. But, yeah, there's too much walking at Dragon Con not to be in comfortable shoes.
Yeah. And as far as water is concerned, a lot of the throughout the hotels, there is water.
Yeah, just about every panel room has a water.
The negative side is that at night, those water tanks run empty, and the hotel works to keep them full, but they do run empty. Be ready for that and make alternative arrangements. Have water with you, near you. Be ready to go to the store and buy some if you need to. Find a water fountain. There are water fountains in the hotels. Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm doing this year, is getting me some kind of like bag to carry. You know, like, give me a tactical man purse just to hold.
Why are you talking about me? Supplies. You look down and you talk to my
bag. Because I kind of want one of those. I just don't have the $70 to buy one.
Yeah.
I mean, find the knockoff version.
A lot of times during the days when I'm running around the con doing my volunteer work, I'm wearing a camelback.
Yeah.
Because having water with me all the whole time is great, especially if I had to be outside.
That's one thing. If you want something that's going to kind of fit in at Dragon Con, I've noticed I've gone to a couple of the GameStops lately, and since they're now bought ThinkGeek, they have a lot of the ThinkGeek bags there. So I saw like a Hydra backpack, and I saw Star-Lord sling bag. So if you want something that's going to be nerdy and functional, you know, maybe stop and check that stuff out.
Always hailing Hydra.
Exactly. Hail Hydra and hail hydration.
Hail hydration.
That's your
that's a successful new tagline. Hail hydration.
So, is there any particular guest panel or whatever that you've seen so far on the list that you're looking forward to?
Panels?
Yeah, you never see. You stand panels? Out in front of panels, but
I stand outside the panels.
I go out the door. Hodor? Hodor?
No, it's too soon, dude. Too soon.
I don't think he's coming this year. He DJ'd one of the parties, I think, last year.
He did last year. It was pretty good. Yeah,
so how do you feel about Joey Fatone, of all people? You know,
I saw that the other day. That's interesting.
But I hear he's a huge nerd. I hear he has, like, you know, a freaking Batmobile and stuff. So, I mean,
you know what?
Probably just coming to hang out and then, like, hey, you want to judge something
like this? And he's famous. You know what? If he's into this stuff, I love it. He's going to bring the energy.
I mean, originally I was like, that's interesting. Like, I haven't heard that name mentioned in years. And for him to pop up at Dragon Con of all places, I was just like, that's awesome.
No. But along with hydration, there is food.
Yeah.
Food is important. Please eat. You know the old con saying, the 5-2-1 rule. Get 5 hours of sleep a day if you can. Eat 2 meals and bathe once a day. Please, bathe once a day.
At least once, if not multiple times.
Body spray yes. is not an equivalent to a shower.
Even okay, if they you call it Hotlanta for a reason. August is it's damn hot in Atlanta.
September is hot.
Yeah, I mean it was still breaking, you know, low 90s last year.
It was in the 90s last year. I mean, I've got a story.
You know, I guess the other thing I forgot to mention is you think about being in the hotels, but man, we spent a lot of time outside. And, you know, one of the things I didn't account for, having a shaved head and everything, was a hat or to, you know,
cover the dome.
Sunscreen the dome, because I ended up pilling a few days afterwards.
I remember that.
So I got my official Dragon Con smoking hat now, where I put my Dragon Con smoking cigar group patch on.
Yeah, but you got at least a little hair up there to offer some protection.
Yeah, you need to like.
I mean, I'm straight up Mr. Clean.
Yeah, because that's another thing. Give yourself time to get wherever you're going, because it's five hotels plus 2 convention centers. There's a. What you might want to go see one thing that's here, and the next thing you want to see is like on the other side of the city or other side of the con city. So give yourself time to get where you need to go.
Yeah, key to a successful Dragon Con is plan.
Yeah.
We have the pocket guide comes out in advance. You have the app. If you want to be someplace that you want to go to a panel that's in the Westin, and then 20-30 minutes later, you want to go to a panel that's in the Marriott.
You may have
to need to leave early, or you're not going to make it at all. Yeah.
That's why when I get the Dragon Con app, I just go through it and put every single thing I want to see on my schedule, even if there's multiple things at the same time, because the thing I wanted to go to, I may not be able to get to, but there's 3 other things that same hour that I've already marked that, like, all right, here's a good alternative. Like, can't make this one panel I want, but hey, and I think that's what I did last year. We ended up going to one of the gaming panels that weren't on my schedule and met, like, the guys behind the X-Wing board game, which I'm a fan of, and, like, so, I mean...
And that was a fun panel,
sometimes
too.
You go into stuff that you're not planning to go into and have a good time.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you just throw the plan out the window and take a chance and go to the random panel because, hey, what's this? This looks interesting. Let's go check it out. Because that's really what the con is about to me. Yeah, it's being exposed to new things.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've always, you know, loved about Dragon Con is, you know, I mean, there's so many, you know, fandoms and geekdoms represented in one place that, you know... I mean, I can't tell you how many times I stumbled upon, you know, little gems, you know, to your point about the X-Wing stuff. And then, you know, so I'm just really curious to see what, you know, this year has in store. Especially now that, you know, I went last year, rechristened myself a little bit. So, you know, I've learned from the things I didn't do. And I'm just looking forward to having a bed to return to at night.
Oh, God. Yeah, we kind of screwed up on our... We had to do some floor sleeping last year, so it's nice that we have an actual hotel room this year.
And if you're listening to this podcast and you don't have a hotel room yet, there is a Facebook group for that, too.
Yes.
There's a Dragon Con Rooms Facebook group where there are people, even now, actively looking for roommates to split a hotel room with bed space.
Roommates. So, but, I mean, I've seen people, getting up entire rooms, just looking to try to get their deposits.
Yes. Yeah, you have to book this stuff so early in advance that life happens, and there's always somebody who can't go at the last minute. So
right now, I'd bet that there is somebody trying to give away to trade away a room at the room at the Hyatt right now that they can't find somebody to take this room off their hands just to give them back their deposit.
Oh, and speaking of the Hyatt, another place that we're probably going to be at some point that you can run into us, the ESO network that we're on has the annual ESO meetup, which is going to be at the Hyatt 21 Stories Bar, which is right there in the lobby at 10 p.m. on Thursday. So come on down, get your bucket of rum and hang out with us for a minute.
And also, a very popular cigar smoking spot at Con is right there in the Hyatt, that pool deck.
Either there or the back steps of the Hilton, I think, was like the two main spots we ended up
Over the Hilton where was it Trader Joe's?
Trader Vic's.
Trader Vic's. Yeah. Yeah, Trader Joe's is a grocery store, isn't it?
I think so.
Not Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's.
If you need your all-natural.
And they make a good Mai Tai.
Or at Dragon Con, Trader Joe's.
And they make a great Mai Tai.
Yeah. So, yeah, that as far as what I'm looking for is this year's cigar meetup. Because I never got to get the guys who own the Red Foam Booth used to own Prohibition. I never got a chance to check that out when it was open, so I'm looking forward to checking out the Red Phone Booth. I heard they got some like really old absinthe. I've never had any absinthe, so I kind of want to try some absinthe while I'm there. As far as guests go, I know Adam Baldwin just got announced, but he's kind of hit or miss. Like, I'll believe him when he shows up.
Yeah,
he's had to cancel on us a couple times. But
Adam Baldwin is a con legend in. We're never sure if he'll be filming or have to cancel at last minute.
When he shows up, though, it's amazing. It's hard panel to get into. But that's my goal for the week. I got to find somebody that can get him a message to come to the cigar meetup. Because he's one of the few celebrities I know that's definitely all about that cigar lifestyle.
Yes.
I was looking forward to seeing Carl Urban, but he had to cancel. So, but, I mean, there's still, like, tons and tons of great guests.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just love the exposure this year for, some of the Doctor Who guests that we're going to have.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
As a, Whovian, I mean, like, I'm just like super stoked about that.
Even though I don't think we get them the entire con.
No.
Because there's another large con happening. Yeah. I think Canada at the same time. Blame Canada. Damn
Canadians. Speaking of Canadians, Shatner will be there as well on, I think, Monday. Sunday,
what
Monday. Yeah.
Are you saying?
Oh, damn.
Can you cut that out, please?
Nope.
The Shat will be there.
Cut that.
Nothing gets cut. It is raw and unedited.
Oh.
Because that takes too much time and effort.
I mean, no, it really doesn't. It'll take me about 30 seconds. But it's the principle of the matter.
So is there anything with your limited free time that you're like, I've got to do during the con?
Well.
Because you're one of the guys that's like.
Amazingly, I've got a staff to run Thursday for the first time, which means I don't know when I'm going to get to the cigar meetup. But I plan on making it to that. I mean, I'm lucky enough that I get to pop my head into panels that, as long as they're happening in my hotel, which is the Marriott. As long as they're happening in my hotel, I can stick my head into the panel and check it out for a while. So I have a little bit of flexibility with that. But in my current position, I'm all over the place. If it's happening between the hours of 3 to 11, I'm kind of stuck.
And also this year, for the first time, there's a couple of cool things that I saw today. First of all, the Dragon Con Parade, which, if you're going to definitely hydrate. But the first time, it's actually going to be on regular TV. It's going to be on the CW.
Yeah.
They're going to be showing it live and then rebroadcasting that night. So set your DVR. So if you're like me and you don't want to wake up to be at the parade at 10 in the morning, you can always go back and watch it later on.
Man, I think we're usually making it to our room about 10 o'clock in the morning.
Although, this year, for the first time, we haven't talked about this yet, DC TV just announced that they're going to be offering a streaming membership. If you have a membership to Dragon Con, meaning if you purchase the badge and you're attending, you can, I believe it's $10.
Yeah.
That you can get a streaming access to all of the content on DC TV. So if you're not in a host hotel, staying in a host hotel, you can still get your DC TV fix while you're in your room catching
up. Not only that, with that membership, it's going to be available even when you get home. So
yeah, that's my understanding.
If you're out hitting panels and you don't get a chance to watch Dragon Con TV, if you get that membership, you'll be able to download it at any point and watch it.
So,
but you have to be attending.
You had to have a membership.
Just go to the Dragon Con website. It's in the Dragon Con store, and you can purchase that service, which is kind of cool. Because I catch a little bit when I'm sitting waiting for a panel to start, or if I'm back at the room chilling. But yeah, if you're one of the guys that missed out on the land grab, didn't get into one of the host hotels, you kind of miss out on it. And there's always some like hilarious stuff. I mean, I spent like the last couple of days just on YouTube, on the Dragon Con TV YouTube page, watching some of their old stuff from previous years, and it's always hilarious.
Yeah. It's always good to fire up those music playlists and get you in the mood.
Yeah,
and the bumpers are just funny.
Yes. Oh, I think that about wraps us up. Like I said, if there's anything new and interesting, feel free to post it on our Facebook page. Like I said, we will be post as we get closer and have a little bit more idea of what our schedule is going to be. We'll be posting stuff there as well. So yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you're not following us there, follow us there so you can. And like I said, we love to meet listeners. If you're a listener and you come to Dragon Con, look us up at some point. We'll come have a cigar with you or have a beer, whatever. That was probably one of the highlights for me last year. I was wearing my cigar nerd shirt and was walking to another panel. And some girl stopped me. She's like, "Oh, you're one of the cigar nerds?" Like, "Yeah." "Oh, I love y'all's podcast." I mean, because that's like really broadcasting here in the basement of Nerd Cave Studios. We never really get to meet people that listen to the show other than our friends and stuff. So it's kind of cool when we run into something that we don't know them personally. That, "Oh yeah, you actually listen to us." We're not talking to ourselves. And there's also a few other places that you can find more information about Dragon Con. Some other podcasts that cover this on a regular basis.
Yeah. Right here on the ESO Network, the Dragon Con Report. I always wanted to say that. The Dragon Con Report is probably one of the most comprehensive Con podcasts.
They post all the guests, and like I said, they have different people from different areas, different track directors kind of giving their information.
Yep.
And what was the other one that...
It's from the Unique Geek, the 50 Days of Dragon Con, and they put out probably about 20 or 30 podcasts over that 50 days. And they hit everything from newbie stuff to talking to a lot of the track directors to get all the updates.
And also, like I said, if you want to go back and listen to our Dragon Con newbies guide, that's going to be episode 26 of the Cigar Nerds. You can find that on our website. Also, Dr. Q of the Alternate History Track, asked me to plug a couple of his events they got going on. They've got the Steampunk Swap Meet Saturday at 4 p.m. They're also doing Extreme Makeover Steampunk Edition. There's also one of the big ones is Her Majesty's Boasting Contest, which is always hilarious. That's going to be Sunday at 5:30. And they always have their kind of end of the con party, the Mechanical Masquerade, which starts at 8:30 on the 4th. And new this year, they're actually doing teapot racing Saturday at 11:30. So if you've never seen that, go by and check that out.
Are they doing tea dueling?
They're doing tea dueling as well.
Yes!
So yeah, I did pretty good. I got like maybe second place at that last con we went to. I made it to the finals. And then my cookie crumbled.
The first time I saw the tea dueling guy folks with this tea set on their hanging from their belt. I had no idea what in the world they were doing.
I didn't go that far, but I at least participated. And that boasting contest last year was hilarious. If you like talking shit and want to do it professionally, show up and get in on that competition. you might see a strange way and be able to make fun of him, which is always a highlight of Dragon Con. And I think any last thoughts, any last advice?
Only thing I can think of is Dragon Con security. We're, like I said, we're located in the Marriott operations office in the Marriott and in the Hyatt. If you've lost something, please come to us and see if we've found it. If it's been turned into us. if you have any problems at the con of a personal nature that need official attention, like say from Atlanta Police Department, we have an Atlanta police officer that female Atlanta police officer stationed in our operations office in the Marriott that will be happy to talk with you about any problems you may have had while you're at the con. Hopefully you'll never need to use that resource. We really don't want you to have to use that resource, but it's there if needed.
Yeah, DragonCon's always been a mostly safe environment. You have your outliers. You know, shit happens every once, but it's never a...
Any group of people this large will have some outlier. Will have outliers in it.
But, I'd say 90%, it's maybe 95
or more.
Yeah, the biggest problems I ever see is someone who did not drink too much and then hydrated too little, having some kind of medical issue.
That's usually the kind of problems that we see.
Yeah. And also, if you are a cigar nerd and you haven't stocked up for DragonCon and you're local to the area, there's another event the weekend before DragonCon, the 27th, at our local hangout, the Cigar Shop here in Cumming, Georgia. They're having a CAO event.
We're going to have Ricky Rodriguez from CAO Cigars. He is one of their master blenders. He blended one of their more recent releases, the Peon.
Yeah, and we reviewed that cigar when it came out, so it'll be cool to meet him. Plus, and like I said, anything I think General Cigars is going to have discounts on. Plus, there's usually buy some, get some free type of deal with raffles. And it starts at 3:00 on the 27th till whenever we're done.
Till whenever we're done.
So with that, we'll be right back.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
So we've got a fairly extensive lineup today. It's going to be kind of random. Got some stuff about some movie news, some TV news, a little bit of video game news, and I think we even got a book review that we're going to talk about.
I think I've heard that band, Kind of Random.
Kind of Random. I don't know. You know, maybe maybe instead of Mega Ran, we're, Mega Random Men. Yeah, something. I don't know. Don't know where I'm trying to go with that. So anyway, I've been really excited for a little project that Steven Spielberg is working on called Ready Player One. We've talked about the book a little bit on the episode, as well as when we got the release date. Well, we've actually got some, images now of Ready Player One's filming and some of the setup in Birmingham.
Got a picture of a truck.
I gotta say though, it's rather interesting. Like, as I was reading the book, the one thing that I didn't keep in mind is they're playing on these high-end gaming systems and everything. How do you keep those things cool? And after seeing some of the RVs and stuff like that look like they have the gigantic turbines on the side of them and stuff, like, that explains a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if that's just like a random vehicle from the street or if that's what's-her-name's camper that she travels the... travels around in.
Yeah, I don't know, because I mean there's several of them, so I'm not quite sure what's in store yet, but I mean it's just really cool. At first when all of this was getting tossed around, I was a little bit skeptical. Like, I was excited, but then I was like, I don't know. This project could easily fall through. There's a lot of licensing and a lot of stuff. But
I kind of think it's hilarious that they're filming in Alabama, because there's always jokes about Alabama. And, if you've read Ready Player One, his description of the future is like, it's kind of a shithole. And there's a lot of people are living in like multi-story trailer parks. I'm like, you're going to film in Alabama. I mean, there's a joke in there somewhere.
I mean, that's just less that you have to invest in setup and props and everything else. I mean, just use the natural environment. We say that as all kinds of folks now are bashing us from Birmingham. We get called out by millionaires and billionaires that we didn't even know fucking existed because they're in underground bunkers and shit that's all decked out. See, this is the last place people would expect. Damn, y'all are pretty tactical. So I don't know. I'm excited about that project. Curious to see, as we get more images and things released, what it has in store. I only hope the visual and the movie comparison just lives up to, how great of an experience it was as I was reading the book. I mean, there's not I mean, I've read some good books, but that was one that just really kind of sucked me in, and I was like, I don't want to turn it loose. So much nostalgia, and then, you know, just the visual representations, and just, you know, I don't know, so many pop culture references that, I mean, it just satisfied pretty much all my geekdoms.
Simon Pegg, I mean, Simon Pegg's in it, I'm on board. Because if anybody can pull off a dude obsessed with the 80s, it's, yeah, going to be Simon Pegg.
Yeah, absolutely. So up next we got, and you know, we both kind of speculated at this and like, yeah, it's already going to be a thing, but Vin Diesel has came out and confirmed that the Guardians of the Galaxy will be showing up in Avengers Infinity War. Okay. It's Infinity War. Everybody's showing up.
Yeah, I mean,
up.
That's pretty much a no shit.
But I don't know, man. I mean, I'm just concerned that there's going to be too many superheroes on screen that, you know, my brain is just going to go to overload and I'm just going to melt. Like,
well, they've already announced that they're no longer calling Infinity War Part 1 and Part 2, but there's still two Avengers movies. So, like I said, I assume it's going to be a two-parter, even if it's not called, like, a two-parter. So,
well, I mean, you
I
know,
mean, it's going to be like Empire Strikes Back and freaking Return of the Jedi. You know, it's probably going to end with a cliffhanger.
Yeah, well, obviously. I mean, there's got to be something to bait you for the next movie and be like, damn it!
Yeah, because there's almost just that story is too big to tell in one,
and you know,
in
what?
One movie.
And I can appreciate that, you know.
Because look how many people were in Civil War and how, like, and even that, I mean, it was long, but it was so good I didn't realize it was 3 hours until I looked, you know, went outside and it was dark.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this one's got, like, I don't know what, Civil War would have 10, 20 characters in it. Freaking, this is going to have like around 70 people.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, and I mean,
it's going to take a while to tell that story.
You know, and people that, for whatever reason, you know, have not got around to seeing Civil War, first of all, I don't know what the hell you're doing, but get out and see that movie. But then, second of all, like that freaking aircraft carrier scene. If you see nothing else, that's the scene to watch. Like,
aircraft carrier scene.
Yeah, where they, you know, freaking carrier where the, everybody makes their debut. You see Spider-Man, everybody all together.
Yeah, there's no,
like,
aircraft carrier. It's at an airport.
Or whatever. Like, I thought it was a carrier. I don't remember.
The air carrier was in, like, whatever, Age of Ultron. You've got your movies confused again.
That's all right. Anyway, fucking go out and
yeah,
see
Yeah, the airport fight scene is worth the price of admission.
So, you know, all right, so I know how big of a fan you are of Bad Boys. I was a big fan of Bad Boys.
Bad Boys for life.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got the name for the sequel, you know, which is actually going to be Bad Boys for Life.
We ride together, we die together.
So,
Bad Boys for Life.
You know, definitely, you know, you know, wanting to see Will Smith, Martin Lawrence,
yeah, cause I'm glad,
you know,
cause
come back, and I was concerned that they were.
Yeah,
going
the original
to...
rumors was it was just going to be Martin Lawrence, and they were going to kind of introduce two new guys, and Martin was going to be like the captain. But since then, they've, you know, maybe, you know, Will Smith is like finally like, all right, I'll come back, because they're the original duo is going to be in the movie. So yeah, I'm glad those original rumors we heard were just rumors, because I mean, Bad Boys without Martin and Will is just no.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there was such a good dynamic between the two that I don't think it would have fit. You
as
know,
much as I hate reboots, you try to reboot Bad Boys, I'm burning the place down. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Well, I might have something for your reboot coming up just a little bit later in the segment.
Start sharpening my pitchfork.
I mean, you can sharpen whatever you want to sharpen. You got a hell of a fight ahead of you, son. So there's been a little bit of, you know, switching over to Spider-Man Homecoming. There's been some rumors about who may be our next Mary Jane, you know, but I keep seeing conflicting information. So, you know, if you see something that says confirmed and you actually read the article, guess what? It's really not all that confirmed. Not yeah. at all. It's like, oh, we're just speculating. We haven't seen anything official from Sony or blah, blah, blah. Well, then it's not confirmed. Quit your fucking clickbait. We hate you.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, because, you know, Zendaya, which I'm not familiar with her, but she's a pop star, I reckon. But she's been announced to be in the movie. That at least that much is confirmed. But then now there's these recent articles popping up saying that she's been confirmed to be playing Mary Jane in the movie. But then when you actually read the articles, it's like, well, we talked to two people that have knowledge of the movie, and they say she's it. But there's no kind of official statement, so it's still, yeah, could be, could not be.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, so we'll just keep folks posted as we know more.
I mean, I don't care who. She got to be a redhead, though. Like I said, some people might get freaked out. The commentary's like, oh my god, they're changing. You know, they're making Mary Jane black. Or I don't care what color race she is, as long as she's a redhead. That's you got to do that. Freaking like you know, it's like nothing else. Like I said, it's not a female Ghostbusters level of like, you know, offended. Like as long as she's a redhead, I'll sign off on it.
All right, so...
But, you know, even though it's not been confirmed yet, we've watched a lot of the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. She would be perfect as, White Tiger.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what... When I saw the pictures and everything, I was like, that's White Tiger.
I
like,
mean, they've almost got the full, you know, Spider-Man crew, because we've already got Luke Cage, Iron Fist coming out. Nova will probably show up in Guardians at some point. And, like I said, make her... White Tiger. We got the full Spider Squad ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, let me ask you: were you a big fan at all of The Lost Boys?
Hells yeah!
I mean, love The Lost Boys.
I mean, back right? in the I day, mean, you know, that's when vampires like, were vampires. I mean, we almost need
a Cry Little Sister montage right here. Like, if I was a better producer, I would have already had it queued up. But yeah, that
but yeah, freaking a lot of planning. Corey Feldman, freaking Corey Haim. The, what's his name? Keither Sutherland. I mean, yeah, like, this is back when vampires were vampires and not sparkly little bitches.
Yes.
I mean, this movie and Monster Squad were probably my two, like, go-to movies in the 80s.
So, did you get around to, I know we talked a little bit about it, did you get around to finishing iZombie?
I've finished season one. I've not watched season two yet. I missed it when it was actually on, so I'm waiting for it to finally make it to Netflix.
So it looks like Rob Thomas is working with CW to create a Lost Boys TV series.
And not the Rob Thomas from...
Matchbox 20.
Yeah. Because every time I see articles about him, that's what I think.
I think they're still putting out albums, too. Like... But yeah, I ran across this article and thought it was rather interesting. I don't know how I feel about, you know, Lost Boys. I mean, this could either go really good or it can go really bad. Like, I don't think there's an in-between for me.
Just on the surface level when I saw it, I'm like, oh, that's probably going to not be good. But since Rob Thomas is involved, he's done a good job with iZombie, so he can kind of do that comedy horror type stuff. So, I mean, I'll give it a shot. It can't be as bad as, like, the last two straight-to-video Lost Boys sequels. Those were pretty awful.
Very awful. Let's just be honest. Like,
but, I mean, that movie was so good back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, it's still good. I mean, hell, it wasn't that long ago when we did our freaking Lost Boys episode. And, I mean, hell, that movie still stands up today. Put that on my, you know, every 6 month to watch list. Like,
yeah. I got what's it? I mean, it's been a while since we had a good vampire TV show. We don't have Buffy or Angel anymore. I mean, maybe it's time for to vampires to come back to TV to erase the damage that Twilight has done to the vampire reputation.
Yes, absolutely. So, did you ever play the video or not video game, the board game Clue?
Hells yeah, I still got a copy of that somewhere.
So, apparently there is a, you know, Clue remake in the works. It's based on the pitchfork board game, so...
No, it's not from the description they've given of what they're wanting to do with the damn thing.
I'm wondering, how do you take that board game and transpose it into live-action TV? Like,
it's going to be a globe-trotting action-adventure show. That's nothing like the game. The game was... almost survival horror, you know, before we had survival horror. It was a mystery in a small, confined location. I don't see how you bring that into, like, a, you know, a James Bond-esque, like, world globe-trotting adventure. It just, call it something else, because that is not Clue. I mean, nothing, like I said, I hate reboots, and that, for the Tim Curry original Clue with, freaking Christopher Lloyd's in it, I mean, there's so many great actors in that movie. I mean, it's a perfect movie. I mean, it bombed at the time, but it's one of those that just gained cult status like early on.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that, you know, people had to grow. You know, I mean, I'm always hesitant. I mean, I work hard for my money, so it's like, do I really want to take a gamble and have a bad experience? So I wait till, you know, I can watch the, you know, freaking DVD or whatever with friends. You know, let them take the initial brunt of the force. But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm just, I don't quite know how it plays out. Like, it just, I don't know. I mean, once we get some, hopefully, you know, some trailers and whatnot and can see,
The only way, because I don't think they could make a good a comedy as they did the original one. If they wanted to reboot it and do something different, the globe-trotting thing is kind of ridiculous. But if they made it like a, almost as like a horror movie, like you went serious with it and, you know, turned it into something kind of like, Saw, that would be an interesting take on. Can you imagine a dark version of the original Clue movie? That might be interesting to see.
I mean, I could get behind that. I mean, you know,
you're trapped in a building with a killer and you don't know who the killer is and it could be anybody. I mean,
you could almost do
just that basic setup. Like I said, if you take the jokes out of it and just make it darker, I mean, it, like I said, it could make a decent horror movie.
I mean, you know, and maybe you could do the travel thing, but maybe make it revolve around like a Jack the Ripper or something like that, you know, so that it's not necessarily confined to one building or one location, but, you know, maybe a geographic region or something. But to make it a worldwide thing, like, your killer would need to be like some kind of virus or something to that effect. Like, not a, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's not on my looking forward to list.
I mean, I don't know. I'll just have to see more and form a better opinion at that point. You know, next, you ever a fan of the Metal Gear franchise?
I've played a couple. I haven't really.
I mean, I remember, you know, Metal Gear from, you know, starting with original NES and, you know, then once, you know, we got some of the PlayStation and then the PS2s and then the next gen stuff. For the new announcement, like, I don't even think you can call this Metal Gear anymore. They're calling it Metal Gear Survive, but it's basically a freaking Resident Evil knockoff at this point with zombies and everything to that effect. It does not look or feel anything like the Metal Gear that's, like, you know, maybe call it something different. I can stand behind it, but this just seems like you're taking a franchise's name and, you know, success and, you know, putting a completely different feel and skin over it. And I can't say that I'm looking too forward to it.
What's the name? Kojima and, like, a lot of the people that's made Konami great have kind of left to do their own thing. What's been left of Konami is kind of making some weird decisions now. I think they're kind of trying to nuke everything they've done before so they can start fresh.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it's like, here, we make something that'll suck. No one will ask us for another Metal Gear game. We can make something new.
Yeah, I mean, but there's so much nostalgia with Metal Gear and Solid Snake and the story progression that for them to just go in this direction, just whatever, you know.
I saw a picture on Facebook and it was like almost like a mafia thing. There was like a kid and it was and it was like, you know, Metal Gear. And it was like he's like, where are we going, Papa? Konami? Like, oh, just out to the field. And they get out there and there's like all these old, like, dead bodies where people have been shot in the head and they're all like different old Konami games. And Metal Gear's like, what's going on? And freaking, you know, Konami's about to like double tap into the back of the head.
Oh, damn it. That's a sad day. Sad day in history. All right, so I can't end on a downer. You have finally got around to finishing At Night She Cries While She Rides Her Steed, or While He Rides, he his, rides steed. His Steed.
Yes.
By Ross Patterson. You know.
Our first, we talked about, I was going to say our first Cigar Nerds book review segment, but we did talk about Ready Player One before. That book is insane.
I mean, and for folks, you know, if you've seen some of the hubbub around a little movie called Range 15 that has shot up in the iTunes charts, you know, I've got
for an independent film, it's like number two on iTunes right now.
So, I mean, you know, for the veteran community and, you know, the backers of the Indiegogo campaign and everything else, I mean, it's just freaking awesome to see the success and, to know that these people are doing things for a good cause. So
for anyone who's not familiar with Rosh Patterson, I mean, he's a filmmaker, writer, director, but he also does these like gonzo independent films. For example, FDR, American Badass, and Helen Keller versus Nightwolves. Those are both up on YouTube if you want to check them out. But he does this character called St. James Street James, the ultimate man. He's the one who supposedly writes and directs all these bizarre-ass movies that Ross does. Well, this book is his secret origin story, because apparently he's 186 years old, so it takes place in the wild, wild west, and it's billed as the romance novel for dudes, and it is just the freaking most hilarious thing I think I've read in a long time.
Absolutely. So I don't want to go into too much detail and ruin it for folks, but I will say that, you know, get out there, buy a copy of the book. I will, you know, I've downloaded the audiobook version. That is absolutely worth it to get Ross and, you know, everybody else's.
Him reading it in character was worth the double dip.
I definitely recommend, you know, getting the hardcover book. That way you can get the full illustrations. Because the illustrations along with the story just go so hand in hand. It'll just add a whole new dynamic.
Did you get it off of Audible?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think with Audible, you can, like, if you look for a discount code, like, your first book is free. So if you just want to sign up and use that for your free pass, then you can get that book. But yeah, it is freaking awesome.
Absolutely. So, you know,
Tears of a Clown. That's once you read it, you'll know what I'm talking about. That's probably my favorite part.
I mean, I'm still working on, you know, I've already got the ball down, so hopefully my old man strength comes in soon. And with that, any additional news or anything floating around out there that you got for us?
I think that's about it. Our next episode will be, our, you know, whatever we record at DragonCon next week. But if you stick to our regular schedule, the next episode's due the day after DragonCon. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's probably going to be a week late, because we're going to have a lot of editing and recovering to do. So we're going to take our fall break.
You got at least 3 days of con crud to get over.
Yeah, so don't expect it up right after Labor Day. It'll be probably the next week before that episode goes up. So smoke them if you got them. Follow us, and like I said earlier in the DragonCon segment, the best way to keep up with us if you're going to be at DragonCon is follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Cigar Nerd Pod, and check out our Facebook page. You can find us on our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com, or on the ESO Network at ESOnetwork.com. Also, our ESO, my brain's all shattered today. It's ESOpodcast.com. Also, check out our shirts at Zazzle and at Real Men Smoke Cigars. Definitely go there, because I talked to George the other day, and they've revamped the website a lot. They've added a few new shirt designs, so if you need a cool smoking shirt, go there and check it out. And they even have jackets now, so check them out. It'll be pretty sweet.
Definitely want one of the jackets.
And with that, always remember, if you're going to go to the Upside Down, don't forget your egos. We're out! And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESOnetwork.com.